that you were all listening to each other. There's too many messages and missions. I could identify the 8 of them. There were 5 this last year, were 3 this last year. You're not part of any of those Sabbaths.
No.
And Peter Lambert was part of it. We have called this meeting to sound a big meeting PG that you're dealing with some issue. That should be a reflection of something we might wish to pin down on. I repeat, it looks as if it's a very big meeting in terms of numbers. To understand, some of those other numbers are not even here, or some of those numbers have not even been identified. But what is very clear is that a one-item agenda is demonstrating such a need for us to get together. One sudden pulse of a 2030 vision, and all of us having to be able to channel our energies, our time, and our resources in that direction. 2030 vision having to do away and bring a big dent on unemployment, on inequalities, and on poverty. Big question that comes by PG is that how do we get there? And the skills are very pivotal in that whole process. We can dream, but without having to save ourselves, this is how we're going to get to that dream. That dream remains a sovereign, a dream. Years down the line, we got to reflect and begin to say, we had a dream. That remains a dream. Now that's what we are going through. I'm seeing a new member, a brand new member. We had an unfortunate situation where one of our staunch members in the committee had to leave and had to take retirement. I'm not sure whether it was early retirement or timely retirement. And the new member is no new face at all to some of us. It's always best to hear the person saying things about himself or herself. And when you are to be doing any talking, you are, a lot of things get to be said about you, yet you are there. And it gets to be misrepresentation on certain occasions. The beauty about also the number of us here as members in the committee is that we, whether it is intended or not, we tend to attract members who are able humbly to address themselves and be able to direct the country forward. In Baumbojan we had such a member. The replacement shall also have to say something about himself and very briefly going forward. maybe just before we start. I'm saying that I'm a protest because you're not invited. Able
to provide the necessary water resources. And primarily we do that through the establishment and development of bulk infrastructure. In particular, development of dams and regional bulk infrastructure. Now, your script to us hones in and becomes very focused around that particular mandate.
We have also been joined by the chair. I don't know whether you are alone, Mashile. Juan Manjai. He is the chair of the Home Affairs Committee. We have sent an invitation to them to join us. They have since invited us as well, conscious of this week. Join them. They are sitting next Tuesday, 25th. So, touching on similar, but with a different focus, as it were. As Home Affairs shall be having an interest in getting permission for all those that are still wanting to come and play a role in our country. That's the focus. Having to be here with us, I'm sure it will be quite a reciprocal experience, learning and sharing. Sorry about that,
Chief. Thank you, Chair. Of course, your request to us hones in and becomes very focused in terms of those skills that are scarce in our country, but essential to delivering on our mandate. And it's the issue of engineers and miners. Without those categories of skills, we are unable to plan correctly. We are unable to be accurate in terms of identifying where there's requirement for additional bulk and for additional infrastructure. And we are unable then to, within time, within scope, within the budget, to reach our goals that we set up across the MTSS, and as you have indicated, in the 3-year period that we've identified where our lapses are and where the need is for the provision of the park infrastructure, with the view that we are able then to deliver on water and on sanitation. So without further ado, let me ask Mr. Joe Kuna to do the presentation. And let me also say that I also have the EDG for NWRI, as well as the BDG for planning and information, who are key in the driving of these mandates for planning and for the construction of the infrastructure. Also have Mr. Pusalexo Luxelo, who is the chief legal advisor in the department, and BDG for comms communication, Matlakala. Thank you, Chair.
Senator DG, good morning, honorable members. Thank you, Chair. The presentation we have deliberately actually kept it as short as possible, but zooming into key issues so that then that can be able to facilitate discussions moving forward. Let me start. I believe everyone has got the core of the presentation. Let me start by saying that the challenge and the battle for skills for the department, as the DG has elaborated, is a key one. And some of the initiatives that we have taken several years back are starting to bear fruit in that direction to ensure that at least the department able to fill some of the posts that we have for skilled scientists and engineers. I'll talk through that actually when I come to the presentation. In the department, currently we have got the total 722 posts that are filled for engineers and scientists, and the vacancy rate of about 68. That we still need to fill. We have recently actually also advertised in this space of scale scales, about 6-7 holes that we are in the process of filling. Some of them, Chair, we do have challenges actually filling. I'll talk to that as I proceed. I think also just to apologize in advance in your slides. I'm talking about slide number 2. It says vacant is blue. So it's the total actual that is filled. The vacant one is 68. Chair, there are about 2 branches that actually have got the most biasness as far as the things that we're talking about is concerned. If you look at my presentation on page 3, you see that it is operational integration, that is our provincial operation, and that is also our infrastructure branch with a total of 164 provincial operations, 286 of the field posts, 173 are in planning and information. Regulation is much more science and scientist based, with about 28. So the biasness there is on the same branches that are indicated, NWRI, that is our infrastructure branch, operations in the province with 286 and 173 for planning information. Now, if you look over the vacancies will also follow suit in terms of where actually they are located. They will be located in the Bay branches. We've actually, when we talk about OSD, of which also include legal and others, you'll also find them in Program 1 under corporate services and the like, but the meeting today is specifically for engineers and scientists, so the business will still remain there, with vacancies for construction at 18, operational integration 29, and also planning information 16, regulation number 5. Now, this is one of the challenges that also we face in the department, especially at the level of chief engineer, specialist engineer, a little bit of professional engineers, actually, where if you look at the edge analysis, most of our specialist engineers are at the threshold of 50 plus, with some of them actually approaching retirement. But here is the slide that I want to talk about, and I think this is where, as a department, we really need support and engagement to make sure that at least we're on the right path, because what we're focusing on now is really the game changers as far as what is that we can do about what we are doing in terms of advertising of posts. Generally, you know, out there in the media or using placement agencies and so on. We have set as a department and come up with about several approaches that we need to undertake to make sure that at least we have the skills that we require. When I talk about skills, I talk about high-level skills, specialist engineer, chief construction project manager. Those are the challenges that the department actually has at the highest level in terms of the skills. That is where actually we are struggling the most to really attract people into the department. We have recently actually advertised the post of chief engineer, chief construction project managers, and also chief quantity surveyors. I can tell you, Chair, that the responses that we have received really shows us out there, you know, we are really trying to attract people that actually qualify as far as those particular posts are concerned. If you look at my presentation, I have separated that slide between 2 key set of skills. The first one is the high-level skills that I'm talking about. The second one, more or less, the entry-level candidate engineer and so on and so forth, engineering technician and so on. Let me talk a little bit more about the high-level skills and interventions that actually we are thinking of deploying so that we're able to deal with the problem that we have sometimes. In the department, we talk about high-level skills. We're not really talking about a group of 100 people or so. We are really talking about a small group of expertise of 10 to 20 people who are able to drive and manage projects at the highest level. I've already spoken about the issue of just recruiting, normally sending out. We have done that already. The response is not that good. We have since actually appointed a company to do also headhunting for us in the post that we have. That also is ongoing. I think maybe we'll be able to use the yield results, but the challenge that we always have is the issue of elimination. You will get the people out there who have got the right skills. But the question for us is that are they willing to be paid what actually government is offering? That is the big issue. The second initiative that we have deployed is to have a water skills partnership forum with private entities in the water sector, in the water and construction sector in general. I'm talking about private companies, where actually we are able to have a skills exchange partnership program. And the way we're envisioning this is where actually we also link it to the CSI, the COVID Social Investment Program, where we are able to get some of the skills in short term from the private sector to come in and high impact in, as far as some of the projects that we would have going in the department. So that is what actually we want to proceed this on ground, so that actually we have that particular partnership with companies that are in the construction sector, more especially. We believe that this program will be able to augment in the short term. When I say short term, I'm talking about the life cycle of the program or the project. We'll be able to augment some of the skills shortages that we have in the department. The third initiative is to have an intergovernmental skills exchange program with departments that actually are in our sector. I'm talking about departments such as public and so on, where we are able to exchange skills, because you might find that the skills that actually we're looking for are available in the department, and that department at that particular moment is not using that particular skill. So we are thinking that probably what we can do is to have that skill come into the department and is able to augment actually the shortage that we have. We have got the Cubans, specialists from Cuba, and I can tell you that they are doing wonderful work out there. We'll be actually be reviewing after the 6 months, which will be ending at the end of the month, their impact on the ground. I think as department also we are saying that let us look at also the high level skills that we're looking at. So bilateral with other countries, we'll be able to actually get these skills, you know, to come and augment and have an impact in actually what we are mandated to do as far as the infrastructure is concerned. So that is the thought about intervention that I talk about. Let me also highlight this issue, Chair, that the biggest issue for us when we go out there and find people, because we do find them, is remuneration. Remuneration for us is a big issue, especially, I'll just give an example, Chair. In the public sector, in the department, you might be a specialist engineer managing a project worth about R1 billion. When you perform and we give you a performance bonus, category A, whatever the case, my case, you end up with at least 45,000 in bank account. Let's flip the coin when you're in the private sector. Your performance bonus scheme is much more higher than what we'll be offering. I've spoken to some of the engineers that are busy, some of our malls, you know, managing projects. And that is the key issue that they bring to say, oh wow, you give me 5,000. But in this project, I'm talking about this much in terms of just the cosmetic bonus. When I achieved my goal, when I've done what I'm supposed to do, within the time frame and the quality that is required. So that is one of the biggest challenges that actually as a department have, because we do find people that have said. But when we now sit on the table and talk about money issues, it becomes a big issue to say, no, I cannot handle that particular amount. You know, so that is something that at least as a department, together with other departments, DPSA, and government in general, really need to look at to say how do we incentivize. You know, maybe also go far beyond that to say one of the issues that actually I asked some of my chief engineers in the department and chief construction project manager is, why do you stay in the department while there's so much opportunity for you to earn more outside? One thing I find out commonly, it is the spirit and the commitment that people have and the value that they see in the infrastructure that government is building. That is the satisfaction that actually the engineers that we have. The question for us is that how do we spread that far beyond the boundaries of the department? Because when you come to work in the department, you also bring that element of seeing them being built, like the work, finally supplying water out there, and people's lives being changed. I have had this conversation with my engineers, and most of them feel that way. And that is something that probably, you know, as a council, we really need to instill in the school children when they come out from the school up to when they graduate in university and join the employment sector. Now, that is the key issue for us. At the high level, we're struggling to get the specialist engineer, chief engineer, chief construction project manager, chief quantity surveyors. We have advertised the post, the return lady is very poor. At entry-level chair, the department is doing very well. Let me talk about the learning academy. Since the inception of the learning academy, we have enrolled about 309 graduates into the program. Of those, 267 have found employment in the department. That is at an end level. So we are doing well as far as that is concerned. If we didn't have the program, Chair, our vacancy rate as it is was only the higher than the figure right now. So the program is doing well in terms of entry level into the scientists and engineering jobs. And up to so far, our level of retention is still higher. So we are able to retain some of them. Where actually we have got a problem is also when candidate engineers now become professional engineers. After 5 years or so in the program, in the employee of the department, and they register as professional engineers, that's now the battle of remuneration also starts to say, wow, now I'm registered, now you see I'm a professional engineer, you can't pay me 10 cents, I need to go up the scale. You know, but we have to put them even within the OECD remuneration protocol, but it is something that also we, you know, we battle to retain what someone actually has registered with the contract. Because then that battle of money now comes into the table. But at entry level, we are able to fill the post without any problems. I'm also talking about areas such as engineering technologies and so on and so forth. So we're able to do that. Artisans into that space, we are able to do that as we move on. The challenge for us is, as I explained before. Now, here is the problem statement that I want to bring to the table. First and foremost, also, we would like it to expand the program. But we find that at least in at tertiary level, there are other fewer men and side people coming out of the high schools. That's one of the challenges that we have. The issue of also lack of mentors, people that are actually able to mentor the graduates and they can't. We have able to retain now about 2 or 3 retired engineers that actually bring around with the GTs to mentor them daily on a daily basis as far as their interventions are concerned, and so on. We'd like to expand that to make sure that it is the mentoring program is able to yield as much result as we can, as far as possible. The graduates are able to register with the cancer and become professionals. The first intervention is to have what areas of them. They will be the exhibition actually by starting next month, where we are. If we are, our aim actually is to sell the water carriers as much as we can at the lowest level. The second integration is to really increase the footprint of the learning academy. And here it's very much important for the department to say that when we say we increase the footprint of the learning academy, our view also is of the entire water system. The question for us is then, how do you make a scarce skill? How do you make a scarce skill to be less scarce? We really would like to increase the pool of engineers and dentists in the sector. So at least we have as much option as possible when it comes to recruitment. I know that the country has problems with CAs, head of accountants. At one point they were scarcer than scarce. You know, there were iterations. Today we are able to hire some of them. We need to have the particular approach when we are dealing with this particular problem to say how do we really increase the pool as much as we can. The third one, we also need the intervention of also the committee and everyone in general, is to really engage the education from our side to say how do we develop an incentive or retention program for skills, especially at the high level, not at the level, at the level of specialists, chief engineer, professional engineer, and so on. Because as far as we see, the remuneration protocol for OECD is not really working, because really the remuneration outside there is still higher and much more attractive to the engineer. And it is timely. So we really like to engage with DPSA and continue to engage DPSA and all other stakeholders to see actually how do we move to that position where actually we are able to compete effectively in the job economy. At the moment, we have got about 150 engineers in the learning academy. Some of them will be registering with SAU, they will be doing their registration to be professional in the future. And like I said, we'd really like to expand as far as this program is concerned. We have already advertised the post of engineers that actually will be retiring. As I've spoken about the threshold and the median for age, when I was talking about the age analysis of engineers, that's at least between the 50 and 55 years of age, most of them actually will be retiring. So we have to really advertise that. So in my closing remarks, Chair, the Learning Academy has graduates that are in the program. But as a department, we are generally about 15 years behind. Because to grow an engineer for a student, it takes a number of years. And also the OECD dispensation requires those particular years of experience is concerned. So the gap that we have is at the highest level. And currently, with the problems that we have to do something that is extraordinary as far as trying to get the skills on board, whether we find them internationally, whether we find them in the country, and see that actually they are remunerated at the level, or we grow the skills. But it is something that we have to constantly do to make sure that at least in the next 10, 20 years, we have solved the problem today, you know, rather than actually continue the same problem moving forward. Thank you, Chair.
I'll propose that you take another presentation from groundwater. If that is fine.
Thank you, Chair. Morning, members. So when I see the plans of the presentation of the engineering team, the presentation that we circulated is all inclusive in terms of the skills. So you find that it's a bit wider, but the focus is really on what you're doing at Renault Tech. So I want to apologize for that. We try to look at it as skill development all throughout the organization. And I do hope the presentation I'm doing is a copy for the members as well. The first page or second page in terms of what is put down is just the looking at the different the skills development act in terms of dividing, looking at 18.2 and 18.1. We're starting with 18.2 just to say this is where the target was unemployed people or unemployed graduates. And what we've done there is just to actually categorize it in terms of males and females and also the different classes that we have them of people in our country. So this was just to show where we started in terms of taking people and employing people who were unemployed and the categories of how we have managed to do that as well. And the grand total of that comes down to 129. On the second page, we really are looking at the, third page, I'm sorry. We're looking at breaking it down, looking at which ones were apprenticeships, which ones were leaderships, graduates and health and external bursary programs as well. And you can actually see that in the myriad of skills that we're looking at, for looking at electricians, fitters, attendants, instrument, mechanical, on the leadership, water and sanitation and water purification, graduates and interns, looking at all facets of the business from procurement to environmental management, engineering, process technologies, chemistry and microbiology and water quality. And the reason why we went this route as well is to run organizations that we're dealing with. It's not necessarily purely just looking at exclusively engineers in the traditional sense of the word. So we look across in terms of the requisite skills. Some come from the lowest level to the highest level. And in most cases we find that people that are actual operators of plants, you don't necessarily need the highest qualification, but you need the appropriate qualification. Because as has been said by the previous speaker as well, most of the issues become, if you have now those people with the highest qualifications, you can't even have one step. So you need appropriate qualifications, and in fact, the issues that you raised of salaries that are related to that. So you need to make sure that it's appropriate for whatever the those people who get qualifications. So that's why it's more stratified. We call it engineering and engineering-related skills as well. That's why we actually put it down in this level. And as well, there's a lot of programs that look at our external budget programs. The number here comes down to the 2, and it's actually broken down in terms of exactly what you're looking at. On page 4, now this is 18.1 in terms of the employees. This is now focusing on internal subcategories, and these are the skills that we're looking at from. There are some that are looking at business administration, but the focus primarily is on the technical side as well, looking at water and wastewater treatment processes, wastewater process control, water purifications. And here the target was looking at NQF level 4 as well, and the total comes to 350. So the focus there was training on internal staff, in particular on technical weather-related skills. And on the next page, it's internal reservists and leadership. 178 reservists divided into these categories that we have here. These are people that we took sometimes direct from Matrix as well. But then you do have the other people. And then the other section is on learnership, and there were also 178 of them. And these are water-related, and we're looking at water treatment, technology training, and we have the different certificates, looking also at managing a business in terms of business administration, looking at development of management skills, and looking at the side of the accounting, but also now looking at water and wastewater treatment processes as well, and water certification. And what we did as well, specifically now focusing on our academy as well, because part of the training we're doing internally, and we also have the Rainwater Training Academy. We had a program, we find that it's a bit dated, but it was important to give the context wherein we had a program with looking at graduates as well. And this was funded through the Infrastructure Skills Development Grant. And the total intake was 120 graduates who have tertiary qualifications. And the focus was really on technical skills, and all the students need to have had at least a basic first-line degree, if I may use the word. And the duration of this program was 3 years. We had two intakes, one in June 2012 and the other one in May 2013. And out of that, the categories were looking at apprenticeships, engineering, process controllers, and water quality in general. And the numbers there are actually broken down on page 6 in terms of exactly how these were done. And I am happy to say that we were able to finish with these tranches in terms of even locating the graduates after they had completed their training as well. But as we did that as well, I'm not sure. We also now had, because initially our arrangement with National Treasury was we were going to do the first intake and the second intake, but we were asked to actually come in for the third intake as well, because what National Treasury did was they worked with us, but not only us, they also worked with some of the municipalities where they actually gave them the funds similar to the one that they gave us, but we were not able to finish those programs. So they actually asked us to come and help them to save the program, so to speak. So we're currently busy with setting in terms of going through a similar program that was done previously by some other government bodies, and they were not completed. And this is just a breakdown. Because part of that, I think, was the Manji, which has been a program that government has done over the time. But we then had to come in and assist in taking that over to make sure that that can be completed. And these are the breakdowns as well, where you have for engineering, looking at chemical systems, electrical and chemical. And then we do have about 7 apprenticeships in terms of looking at electrical. So this is currently happening every day now, and the situation will be for 3 years as well. And from our side as well, we also understood that even if we are housing based, so to speak, one other area that has been raised by the students is related to the fact that in the water state, most of our infrastructure is somewhere in the rural areas, primarily. You find most of our plants are somewhere where you don't even have a lot of people staying. So getting qualified people to actually go and stay in those areas sometimes is a very big problem. So our approach was, we had an initiative that we called Rural Development Graduate Training, where we went and tried to teach people that come from particular areas in the rural states and tried to train them so that they can go back home and operate for those areas. And it's some of the things that we're trying to do differently to see whether can't you make sure that you locate the right skills in the right towns, because in most cases we find that the urban areas you do have and you can easily attract the skills that you need, but when it comes to the rural space, some of the people don't want to go there. But at least if they are coming from those areas, it's very easier to actually look at that. So we actually identified about 40 graduates who had secondary qualifications as well, and the duration of this program is 3 years as well, looking at May 2014, May 2015, and June 2015 as well. And the spread of this is in accounting, engineering, process control, the scientific process, human resources, law, and information technology. So what we did was we identified particular municipalities in the rural places and what kind of training requirements do you need, what kind of skills are you really short of. And as part of this program, we looked at training these people with the intent of now deploying them in those areas. Of course, there's always a challenge that comes with whether those people can be there. So what we do is we have a program that is funded for on one side, but on the other side, we have a back-to-back agreement that they need to be employed and stay in those areas for a particular duration, because at least that way you can make sure that they are skills that are in those particular areas. Oh, and then the graduates are currently placed as follows. The first intake, workplace experience in various rainwater business units. Second intake, the classroom-based training. Third intake, classroom-based training. And what we do, and I think it's quite important for me to highlight this for the committee as well. The water space is one of those where it's very difficult to go to a certain institution, get the qualification, and go and be ready to work tomorrow. Because you need you actually have to have practical training in terms of what you do. So what makes us a bit different is we're not trying to compete with the tertiary institutions, but we are able to provide that practical experience in terms of what we need to do, because we do have the plans. And what we do as part of the training, we actually expose people to the real space where they are working with the plant and operating it, unlike when you are in a teacher space where you're talking purely on one side. So that's the difference. And we always try to explain that much as we have an academy, it's not necessary to compete with the formal teacher institutions, but it's actually to complement each other. So currently, in terms of our space, there is a lot of work that we do in the universities that are surrounding where we are and what I do, to try and make sure that we can actually complement each other rather than seem to be competing, so to speak. And what we try to also put down as an academy is not only are we looking at the requirements given within the country, but something that we do in Mpumalanga as a whole, because what happened is our minister, I think in April 2015, decided that our mandate is being expanded to start looking at also in the Mpumalanga as a province in terms of the work that we need to do and turn around the area as well. But what we've done as well through the academies, we understood that getting into an area that's primarily rural as well, some of the people never actually had access to water. So the academy has actually gone through that and did what we call a Mpumalanga skill body, actually going to the different municipalities to actually determine what kind of skills are needed, so that when we come as an organization as well, we can have things that are tailor-made for the requirements in those areas. Because you can have generic skills and say this is what's necessary, but you need to actually try and find out and tailor-make things to the requirements that's on the ground. So much as we are there as an organization in terms of the bulk side of the business, we are also trying now to work with the municipalities, having identified what their requirements are, and make sure then that we can tailor-make training in our program, especially speak to what their requirements will be once now they have to operate, because in certain instances there's a lot of rural areas where you have villages that we are putting on the grid, so to speak, in terms of making sure that we do reciclation. Some of the people are getting water for the first time. But now being able to manage those plants, being able to even do process controlling in terms of the sanitation side as well, and just nobody on the communal side, being able to do the dealing and all those kinds of things. The people have never done it in those years, so even the municipalities never got those skills because those functions do not exist. So what we're doing is, that's why we started with the problem of saying, let's do a skill audit all throughout, and we're working with the provincial leadership and the local leadership in terms of doing that. But that's some of the problems that we're doing from a point of view in the biggest scheme of things, looking at skills development. And what we do as well is we've tried to ensure that as the academy and then through Rainwater itself, we're looking at the shifting in line with the international trends in terms of what is new, looking at the kind of training that we need. So we do have some associations with UNESCO as well, like IHE, we are also working with FinTech in Mozambique, assisting them as well from the Southern African point of view to set up an academy as well. So in the international water space as well, we are trying from a point of view of skills development to operate at that level as well. Because some of our countries, because I think the next page talks about some of our own, it's a sample of some of the training that we have done with the names and exactly what the people have done. And some is actually then sent outside to be exposed at the international level to the kind of skill that we're talking about. So that's why we're looking at this thing in a program in terms of what we need to do. So page 12 and 13 are actually showing the kind of qualifications that we're talking about, the sections that these people are working in, and for each we assign a mentor as well to make sure that we are following on the progress that comes from the training that we're doing. And the last one is the other thing that in terms of whether the people were paying, whether they were on contract, and now we will be working with them and we'll be looking at it in that way. And I know the normal question is always training, a lot of people are we able to absorb them. Some were able to absorb, some have actually been taken by the private sector, but in most cases at this level there hasn't been a problem from a point of view of people finding work as we do. Like I said, in the field, looking at 18.2 in terms of the Skills Development Act, sometimes the program that we did with Massachusetts was training of people that were unemployed, but then trying to locate them in the municipality where they were issued. And in certain instances, we as an organization were able to absorb the skills in terms of the people that we trained. And I think the last part that I want to share, which might not be there, is at this stage, just looking at the categories of what we've done, we have about 80 scientists and fields in terms of the training that we've given. And in engineering and related type skills that are technical, it's about 151. And this ranges from artisans, engineering assistants, technicians, technologists, project managers, process controllers, and operators. And at this stage as an organization, we have about 15 vacancies for engineers. And the reason for that, out of a complement of around 3,200, but the reason for that is as the people get trained as well, and as they come out of the group, that's the gap that we actually utilize for the training of the people. Once they are done and then they can place them somewhere else, we use those vacancies actually to absorb the other ones who actually go through the process as well. So in short, that's what we do in Shepherd's and Everett at this stage.
Thank you.
We will have the engineer and council set up. Why we are allowing everybody to present, if you are to look at the trend from the two respective presentations or submissions, they are more or less on the same issues, not entirely same, but more or less. So that we don't have to repeat when another presentation should be submitted, the same questions or comments or inquiries. So let's allow ECSA. Can I get an indication from the Youth Council whether they prepared anything?
Yes.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members. My name is Ikuma Bautela. I'm the CEO of the Land Council of South Africa. I hope that our Honorable Members are in possession of the presentation that I prepared for you. It's not a long presentation, it's quite a short presentation. But may I preface my presentation, Honorable Chair, for saying that ESA, or the Engineering Council of South Africa, which is commonly known as ESA, often finds itself in a spotlight when there are controversies required regarding the skills of people. For an example, for a lot of media people coming to protest regarding the hosting of the events to South Africa, regarding the structure that has been unfolding at Prasa, regarding issues of concern. And of course, when we saw the letter coming from Parliament, it also called upon us to pronounce on the issues of skills. Time and time again, in my office, I host a lot of TV and media people around the very same question. So I think we tend to be passed in that spotlight for reasons that are not really aligned with our legislation, unfortunately. I must say that. So that then necessitates on our side to actually speak about what is it that we're doing in our space and what kind of interventions are we making or contributions are we making toward issues of skills in South Africa as it relates to our profession, the engineering profession. My second page here, it talks about the origins of the country, where we come from, why we exist. We exist because of the provision of Section 22 in the Constitution, which grants the right to every citizen to choose their education or profession and to practice the chosen profession or occupation. And South Africa shows that the professions are going to be regulated, including the engineering profession. That has given rise to the Engineering Profession Act number 46 of 2000. As a matter of policy, outlined also in that act, registration is a tool by which we regulate the profession. So when say people are registered, those are the people that fall within the net of regulated engineers. But then what we do on a day-to-day basis when we regulate the profession, we develop policies. We develop policies, standards, and procedures. If I was just to give an example of what we mean by policy, in the context of registration, we would determine whether we register people through examinations or we register people through peer judgment, which is what we commonly use at the exam. Then we set up the standards based on the peer judgment model and the procedures that will be followed by those who apply for registration. We also determine policy standards and procedures in relation to academic qualifications at universities, together with the Council for Higher Education. If an institution, for instance, comes from outside of our country, they wish to establish an engineering department, they will need to demonstrate to everyone what the content of that program will entail. And once we are satisfied with the fact that it meets our standards, then we can recommend to the Council for Education to allow them to open up that program in our country. Equally so with standards for competency for those people who are competent to practice as engineers. Because not everyone who has a qualification may be regarded as a competent engineer. That requires someone to have a certain experience or training. And the second block, you see registration and accreditation, that's where then we accredit the programs on an ongoing basis, whether they continue to adhere to the standards set by ECHA. We also register those who bring a portfolio of evidence of their experiential training and register them if they meet our standards as professionals. And we assure that the quality of people that are registered is of high quality standards. And then the third leg is on the professional conduct. Those who are registered with us must adhere to a code of conduct, a code of practice, and if they fail, we are allowed by the Act to sanction them. We can register them, we can impose a fine if their conduct is found to be unprofitable, or we can even suspend their registration. Each and every registration of an individual, an engineering practitioner, is off a period of 5 years. And one must demonstrate that he continues to acquire skills and be in line with the evolving technological environment that we live in. And say, even methodological way to determine which one acquires those points, so that at the end of the study, they know his registration can be used going forward. And that program is called Continuing Professional Development. The other roles that are played by ECTA, we deal with what we call identification of engineering work. Having set the standard of competence of people who are registered as professionals, we need to match that with what we call reserved work for registered people. In South Africa, that project has not yet been complete, and as a result, it's a bit problematic to sanction those people who do some work that ordinarily will, in the long run, be reserved for registered people. That effort has been going on. It is sitting with the Competition Commission at the moment, because the job reservation by its nature is an anti-competitive practice. Therefore, it requires some form of authorization or approval by the Competition Commission. We also do the recognition of voluntary associations, a number of associations in the engineering space, who have an interest in developing the profession, as opposed to our role of playing the role of being the reverend or the policeman in this year. We've got about 45 recognized voluntary associations. These would be typically like the South African Institution of Civil Engineers, the Institution of French Fellows, and so forth. We participate in international forum where we benchmark our standards against other countries, and that in itself creates attraction for our engineering practitioners, because it gives them the ability to move freely with those countries where we are going to have reciprocal arrangements with them to recognize those that are registered with us and recognize those rights of them. And in that platform, we also look into the issue of equivalence of qualifications. Those who are qualified in our institutions from programs that are accredited by ECTA, to check if they are equivalent from the other countries, if they want to come and apply their training in South Africa. So the issue of international benchmarking is one of the exercises today. We are members of the International Engineering Alliance to give effect to that notion. We also advise the Minister of Affairs, because we fall within the ambit of the built environment profession, to provide them with issues of engineering intelligence, what works here, what works internationally, etc. So we play the advisory role to the Minister of Public Works. There are societal benefits if we recreate our profession. If I go to page 5, we by and large give assurance to the public that those who are registered in us and who adhere with the code of conduct will produce the results in terms of our public infrastructure that is beyond reproach. When you walk into your building, you should not see a public building like mosques, churches, etc. You should not fear that the roof will collapse upon you if that building has been designed or its construction has been supervised by a registered person. That when you drink water from the tap, that water is not going to harm you. It's going to be inward. And I hope that water is used in registered entity, if it will give effect. So that quality of water. And that when you drive, you come the roads. And you get where you want to go. There will be no potholes, because that road would have been designed by a competent people. And when you switch on your plug, it's not going to choke. Just to give you an example. And I'll give you pictures here. When you cross the bridge, not by corners, of what is this that we provide as a form of assurance to our society. People are registered with us. They have gone through a rigorous check on whether they are competent or not. There are a variety of categories of registration on page 6 who are registered with our engineering profession. We've got professionals. Those who are professional engineers who are qualified with a BH degree, obviously, engineering degrees. We've got technologies, professional technologies with a BH degree, certificated engineers, professional technicians, we've got lower diplomas. We also register people who are candidates who are just qualified from these institutions of higher learning. We simply wait their qualifications at that stage, and they can come into the net and go through their experiential training, but within a registered ambassador of people. Again, it depends on your entry qualification. Yeah? And we also have what we call specified categories. Those are people who are practicing in the engineering space in a specialized manner. That it more often does not correspond with a particular accredited university program. A guy who have acquired qualifications from workplace. For instance, the guys that are dealing with the lifting machinery, lifting inspectors, you find that they underwent their training to their places of employment, and they come in and they want to register in good categories of thought. They are not registered people, so that they too can also be recognized going forward. I just showed you a picture here. These are pictures that come from the media. Please apologize if you're offended by these pictures. But if you look at the page 7, the bottom right is for people who have designed and constructed the bridge, but when they match the bridge, it has been matched. So that is to show you that the standard becomes so important that idea, so that at the end of the day, you've got a bridge that comes together without spending so much. There's a big project that's been done by someone in Devon near Kitwe, and we went to build that one. And you can do the bridges in much incremental from different ends. And just hope that at the end of that process, they will tie up. Because if they don't tie up, then there's going to be a big problem going forward. But because we've got the computer engineers in our country, we hope that's going to happen. We've done any of these kind of issues. So we don't think that's going to be a problem. But if you move up there, you see a sinkhole where perhaps the bearing of the soil was not tested properly to lay up the road infrastructure ahead of it. And somewhere down the line, the soil just collapsed, and that created a big problem. And on your left top there, we've got a legal engineer, but it's a problem that has been talking about in the media. But it relates by and large to issues of competence. That's about the fact. And you cannot be declared as a competent engineer unless you are registered in Texas, because Texas is the only institution in this country that has the authority to make such a pronouncement. Now on the patron side of it, it's the code of conduct. If there's no code of conduct that regulates people in their sphere, you'll find squabbles such as the ones that we've discussed. All of these come from our public domain. We did not create the features, they are all in the media. On page 8, this is a worrying picture. We've got in a pool of people that qualify with engineering qualifications from our universities. About 10% of them, the speaker is here from time to time, 9, 8, 10% of them, they get engineering qualifications, but they go and practice in a different area altogether. Banks tend to absorb a number of people with engineering qualifications. They are not doing any engineering anything. They're just doing the planning for them. But others fall off the system because they can't get employment. There are many reasons why that 10% disappears from our radar. But at the top end, we've got about 38%, it varies from 35 to 41% of registered professionals in various categories that I mentioned earlier on. However, we've got this number of about 52% of people that are not registered, and yet they are economically active, and their activism is in the sphere of engineering. And that worries us because it dilutes the regulated environment. The voice of those who are within a regulated environment is a minority compared to the voice of those who are not regulated. And then that raises the question among our public, why should I be registered in the first instance? Or it leads us to the next question, why others are registered and others are not registered in South Africa? And if you go to the next page, the net effect of the dilution is such that you get also people in the engineering school who claim to be engineers, some of them others are not really engineers. And you can't get a healthy fish from a polluted river. This in itself, having a mixture of regulated and unregulated business, becomes as a way of pollution in our professional environment. But why then do you have engineers that are not regulated? First of all, in terms of Act, the term engineer is not defined. So anyone can come in and claim to be an engineer. That's very problematic. Even if we want to decide and discuss and come to a conclusion as to how we regulate the profession of engineers, some people have got different interpretations of what an engineer is. And therefore, getting that coherence in discussion may become problematic for your definition of the term. Number two, professional registration is not compulsory in terms of our act. Only those who prefer to come into the prison register can do so. Those who choose not to register, they remain outside of the regulated environment. And the third point is that employer bodies, such as my friend next to me here, Brian Waters, are not compelled to employ engineers. There is no treasury regulation, notice, or anywhere in our legislative framework that compels employers to employ only registered people for the public infrastructure. But withstanding the benefits that it would have if they were to employ registered. There are certain rules, therefore, that the public expects to be paid by extra, but not actually happening that way. One, practice. ECHO does not practice engineering or intervening areas of practice. We regulate those who practice engineering. We don't come out as ECHO
with our engineers and design a water purification system or a bridge. Just to give an example,
the planning itself will run them out to ECHO being a player in an environment which is also a critique. We only regulate those who practice in that space. That's a very important point. Number two, ECHO does not influence areas of practice. We cannot tell engineers that you must only go and be employed by any water or any water. It's not our space. All we have to do is to determine whether this guy is competent or not competent in terms of portfolio areas that he brings forward to us when he applies for registration. The issue of influence has created a bit of a strain between us and voluntary associations when government approached ECHO to enter into the memorandum of understanding with the PICC, Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Committee. And the voluntary associations were up in arms saying, you are now trespassing, getting into the space of practice where you ought not to be. So we are very much sensitive to that area. We just want to remain as a regulator and not a practice entity in our profession. And then the third point, we do not discriminate any applicant for registration. Whether someone comes from Czechoslovakia or China or India or Cuba, for that matter, if you come and bring in a portfolio of evidence that meets our standards, we will register it. There is no rule that says you only register South Africans. You register everyone who applies to register. You tell your qualifications, if they're equivalent to our accredited qualifications, and tell your experiential work if it meets the standards for registration, we then register you. But once we've registered you, we expect you to abide by the code of conduct, to pay the subscription fee, so that you also get paid in sustained organization, and of course, to get into the continuing professional development program so that every 5 years we can do this. So what are we doing to improve the space, the regulated environment? We are looking up to Parliament to amend our Engineering Profession Act to make it compulsory for engineers' practice in the public infrastructure space. We think that is very important. We have spoken to the Minister of Public Works, and we hope that members of Parliament will heed our request to make this compulsory, so that we can ensure that everyone who is involved in the outlay of public infrastructure has the necessary prerequisites for this. And number two, we're also asking through the review of our legislation that ECHO must have some form of authority over institutions that depend on professionalization. Organizations such as the water boards, the roads, rail infrastructure, BRASA, SANRAL as well, ESCOM, we want to have some form of authority such that those people are employed by them, performing engineering services, are compelled to be registered with ECHO. And if they fail to employ such people, then there should be consequences on the institutions themselves. And that's, of course, encouraging all hotel associations to rally behind the good of the purpose. We want to expand the registration scope of the people. We continue to increase the number of programs that can be looked into for registration purposes so that no one is left outside of the ambit of registration. We are talking to PEJA in case the registration process takes longer to work with us and issue some kind of pressure notice that compels institutions to employ only competent people. I hope that our council would like that to happen. We employ only the best to lay out the infrastructure that we need on a day-to-day basis. We are continuously looking into how we register people. We want to have an objective, transparent, and a consistent registration system so that no one can question and raise issues of gatekeeping when we register and arrest people going forward. Of course, in terms of our strategy that we have, if we wish to play a substantial social economy in, but we do so within the confines of the providing act going forward. So, Honorable Chair, we are not the financial or the bureau of bullets, unfortunately, that will solve the issues of steel shortages in the country. But we contribute through what has been defined for us through the engineering by determining those standards against which it can be determined with a competent or not. That's the contribution that we're making. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the submission. You may switch off. We would have loved to listen to the Southern Council, but they had indicated that they did not prepare anything, unless I got wrong.
You got wrong, sir.
Is that the message I'm just getting from?
Yeah.
From Madia. You don't have anything that you are going to speculate?
No, that can't work, sir.
That's what I'm referring to. Okay, you may wish to speak. They had indicated that they shall speculate on the presentation later. Thanks, sir.
Thanks, Chair. And greetings to other members of the Portfolio Committee. And I'll stakeholder within the state of the water and sanitation space. Addressing you is Mr. Vuyoye Kranik, who is the provincial coordinator of the South African Youth Council in the Western Cape. But I'm with the Secretary General of the South African Youth Council in the second in Kosovo. And at this moment, let us also convey the apology of our president, Mr. Tulani Shafuta, who owned other commitments, couldn't make it to this time. But he has then delegated us to represent the Council of the Vice Chair. And we have been asked to address particularly the issue of challenges facing graduates in securing employment in the public service in general, but the sector of water and sanitation in particular. Now, it is also important that I just take you through to the background of the South African Youth Council. Formed in 1997, the South African Youth Council is a civil society umbrella for all youth organizations. It is the instrument through which young people invest, find expression, and are champions. The country also provides a platform for youth organizations to make contributions towards youth politics and monitor its implementation in all spheres of government. Our work is also to facilitate the participation of youth in upholding democratic values and civil education, primarily, our work is centered around education, skill development, training and development, entrepreneurship, civic education, sports and recreation, and other spheres in which young people are found. Now, as it relates to what is expected of us in this portfolio committee meeting, we are going to zoom into the issue of youth employment in general, but graduate unemployment in particular. And that is the ticking time bomb that we are currently facing. Chairperson, the employment, unemployment, skills and economic growth report of State SA have recently revealed that the unemployment rate for those with post school education has increased from 6% in 1994 to 14% in 2015. It has also revealed that 52% of all young South Africans remain unemployed, regardless of their academic qualifications. Now, we also have, as a country, the third highest unemployment rate in the world amongst people who are aged between 15 and 24. What worsens the situation is the racialized nature of both youth and graduate unemployment, and that has an impact on the envisaged transformation of the state by this entire system. And it is something that we hope to add some proposals towards. Now, one of the measures that we advised to attempt or to address the scourge of youth unemployment was the Youth Employment Act that was signed on April the 18th in 2016 by the government and its social partners. Now, the South African Youth Council, which you are representing, is at one of those signatories that is representing the youth sector. The ACOG has six commitments that are aimed at addressing youth unemployment, and they are as follows: education and training, work exposure, public sector matters, youth target set aside, youth entrepreneurship and youth cooperatives, and the last one is the private sector measure. But in the context of this committee, I would confine ourselves to the issue of education and training, work exposure, youth set aside, public sector measures, and youth entrepreneurship. And I had indicated that the National Youth Accord, Youth Employment Accord, was rather signed in 2013. Our, the South African Youth Council, has been constant measures aimed at monitoring its implementation by all the ministries and all social partners of government. Now, the challenge of youth employment and graduate unemployment features prominently as well in the National Youth Policy 2015-2016, which will be signed later during the course of this day by the Minister in the Presidency, Honorable Jeff Hartley. Now, it is also crucial that the Department take stock of all that it has done in pursuit of the commitment of the National Youth Employment Accord, so that we are able to address that since 2018. This has been the response of the Department of Water and Sanitation, and how best can we ensure that implementation of the effort or its commitments gets affected by both the Department and its entity. Now, key issues that we would want to bring to the attention of the Portfolio Committee are as follows. Firstly, there is the issue of e-graduates, actually, that majority of employers usually declare that the graduates that are produced in North Africa are devoid of such graduate attitudes. But what is of concern to the South African Youth Council is the fact that the same employers do not take any role in ensuring that industry is fair. Graduates who are in possession of the desired graduate attributes. And it is something that perhaps the Engineering Council also needs to apply its mind to. Now, with existing work integrated learning programs, there is difficulty in ascertaining the extent to which it actually empowers graduates to thrive or succeed in their fields of study. Now, there are also concerns around the issue of e-internship. It might not be peculiar in the water and sanitation space, but the reality of the matter, Chairperson, is that in most of these internship opportunities, graduates are relegated to duties that they do not have to be performing in the rest of the field. Those are duties like printing, setting, and other issues that are not necessarily embedded in the curriculum of engineering or other graduates in the South field. So that is another concern that we have as South African Youth Council. Now, another concern here is that in as much as there are attempts by government departments and entities to avail internship opportunities, but the extent to which such internship opportunities enable graduates to thrive in their profession is limited. I am saying this because in most instances, you get a department advertising internships, but a number or the majority of those internship opportunities are not necessarily pursuant to the core mandate of the department. You find, for instance, out of 50 internship opportunities, 30 are at an administrative level, only 20 are for staffing and all that. That has a massive impact on addressing the issue of graduate unemployment as well. Another issue that we have problematized is the issue of e-professional bodies like the Engineering Council and the extent to which they are playing their part in addressing youth unemployment. I do not think it suffices for the Engineering Council to get a ready-made graduate in their later stages or early stage of their employment, whereas they do not build a pipeline for the same graduate, but they would in later stages want to register or to accredit. So that is another something that we intend on strategizing towards in bringing up solutions to the youth or graduates undergraduate. We should also get an indication of the extent to which the work of the professional bodies ensure the placement of graduates in internship and permanent positions beyond their registration, because of beyond the successful completion of the studies of those graduates. So this might also be that theirs is only to accredit or to regulate the professionals, but they are not responsive to the issue of graduate and youth unemployment, something that we would want to see them playing. So in essence, what we are asking is, how do they play a role in ensuring or in developing a pipeline of those professionals that they will register in later stages? Now, other proposals that we have as the South African Youth Council is that the department and stakeholders should ensure that support for unemployed graduates in the care skills in the water and sanitation space are afforded entrepreneurial opportunities, in a sense that, or let me rather make an example with the Department of Rural Development to say that it sponsors bursaries and scholarships for those who are interested in teaching studies in agriculture. Upon successful completion of those studies, if those graduates do not find employment, or the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform has, is that they avail land portion, they avail plants, machinery and everything else, so that those graduates who are unemployed in the agricultural space are able to form their own cooperatives and venture into business. And we are exploring a similar model for those in the engineering or any other structure in the water and sanitation space. Something that we are key on strategizing with not only the department, but it's other stakeholders as well. Now, the Department of Education and Training has also released the skills for the skill through and for six documents. And it is a skills development approach that is aimed at being responsive to the infrastructural demands and the infrastructural interventions that the government is doing. But what we would want to ascertain is the extent which the department and its entities are playing a role in furnishing the government with skills in the water and sanitation space. It might be that there is work that the department is doing, but it is doing it in silos from all other government departments that are in the infrastructure cluster. And it's something that we are yet to ascertain from this engagement. Then another proposal is the extension of the internship to at least 3 years. Comrade Shepherdson, our concern is that currently an entry requirement or prerequisite in public service is that of being in possession of a qualification and at least 3 years experience. Now, government does avail internship opportunities, but they are only for a 12-month period. Beyond that 12-month period, that means that a graduate would still be short of 2 years work experience for being absorbed into public service. Now, one of the measures that we are introducing is that let there be an extension of that internship opportunity to ensure that upon successful completion of that internship opportunity, the graduate is in a better footing of being absorbed into the department and perform the duties that the graduate studied for, nothing else other than that. So we are also advocating for the capacity building of local municipalities, particularly as we know that majority of the challenges in the water and sanitation space is in the deep, remote, rural areas and other townships, not necessarily where the department is situated. We need in Pretoria or all its other regional offices that they have the footprint on. So what we want to see is unemployed graduates being absorbed by not only the national spheres of government, but by the provincial and the local spheres of government as well. We have also noted commitment that found expression in the departmental budget book, which is of course the minister and the deputy minister. And we have to say that we are unrelenting monitoring the implementation of those and the implementation of what emanated from the National Youth Water and Sanitation Summit that took place in July. Now we shall remain strictly monitoring the progress of all of those. What is also happening, Comrade Shepherdson, is that during the media briefing, providing an update on the implementation of the Nation Association, the President has also reiterated what found expression in the initial SONA address that was made in February on the issue of water leakages and the 7 billion that the nation needs on an annual basis on those water leakages. We have gotten an indication from the department that 15,000 artisans will be trained. But as the program will be launched in PE on the 28th of August, it will be launched with an intake of 3,000 artisans. But it is our desire, Comrade Shepherdson, that upon the successful completion of the training for those 3,000 and possibly the other 15,000, those people do not go back to their misery of unemployment
on the basis of them having gotten successful intervention. But we would also want to see them playing an active role in conscientizing people around water resource management. We are aware that the department already has a program to that effect, but we are proposing that we also consider absorbing those artisans and people who will be trained through the water leakages program into that department, so that their training will not only be on the basis of mending the leaking pipe, the leaking jet and all that, but it should also embed the issue of advocacy for the preservation or conservation of water as well. For now, that is where we can end from your chair. And it is important that I also reiterate the fact that a detailed submission to the portfolio committee and other industry stakeholders will be forwarded in the future with all our details proposal. Thank you.
First, that gets to be a detailed presentation submitted by the four entities. As I said earlier on, the issue is one that we're dealing with. Attention, and also it is not the only, you are not the only stakeholder. You have other stakeholders that couldn't make it through here. The mentioning being made about energy and water feature, and also Salga. Salga, in our strat plan session that we had in Johannesburg, Dad mentioned the fact that they've got about 400 odd engineers that are also invited them through here. But unfortunately, they couldn't make it. They did attempt to try and get us rescheduled for a later date. the youth council, as you listen to all the presentations, they both by Red Water, by EFCA, by department, all of them talk to a need to get those skills. And particularly mentioning being made about the training the young people, that's where your skills are to be located at. And that's where also your energy is to be seen coming from those young people. So that's generally the background you are dealing with. A number of points have been made. As I talked about being the main authority that talks to, in fact, not the main, but the only authority, which raises the question as to how is the EFSA established as a, what we call ourselves, as a body that looks into whether or not you have the right skills. What English word for that? Regulatory body.
Yeah.
And the question that arises there is that how is it structured? Is this a self-regulatory body? Or is this a government established? Is this an industry? I was tempted quickly to go through, you know, the legislation that establishes yourselves. Now, one person would say you are overseeing the sector of engineering schools, but who oversees you so that the governance issues are well taken care of? And you do have certain instances wherein you are your own police and no other police above you, policies you. Probably it is here where you probably are being police, if you like, if you want to use those words. And then, of course, you celebrate your rainwater talking about a whole plethora of issues related to taking care of having to complement what your tertiary institutions are doing, rather compete. And I'm particularly very keen on that field audit and the required interventions.
That pure audit should talk generally to your skilled audits in the country. I listened to the department speaking about vacancy rate versus what currently you have in the employee, but more confined to the department itself, not generally having to listen to what is there at what say. Just the other day, the lead municipality in Sioux State were talking about a need to employ a technical director. The municipality is called Lindsay, something like that. Lindsay. Anyway, it's someone associated with Harris. And immediately they were talking about a need to source one of the Cubans to be placed as an interventionist type of program. Now, having listened to some of the players in the space, as you were to talk about some of the Cubans coming through and the kind of outrage that you got from some of your engineers, your technical people. But we have a number of unemployed people in the country. Today, you have that mismatch that you have as you speak, listening to all the speakers talking. Whilst on one hand, it is about, maybe that's the main issue that you're dealing with, a need for us to be able to say, how best do we incentivize those that are required, especially in those far-flung areas, and how best do you do that? But the department, the DG has taken leave a little bit. The department owes our committee, Mr. Makondo, an explanation, not an explanation, an update rather. That's the word I'm looking for. At the time when the Water Search Commission was here, they spoke of some training programs that they are engaged in. And then we asked a specific question. Yes, what happened then with those engineers and other technical people that you train? And the response, the direct response that we got was that the private sector snatches them. Now, here you have a government that begin the process program training. And the department has no hand as to where that end product gets at. Typically, your health profession, whether it is your doctor or your veterinarian, the veterinarian is the latest, they have that community study program. And others would say it has to be commensurate with the number of years you were supported. If it would have been a three-year program supported in that 3 years, you have to equal that with your three-year community service. Well, that is happening or not as part of it, like as part of your retention strategy. Let alone all the other incentives that you have talked about, just as a basic principle. For us to be able to say, we have an intake of this much that we're going to be dispatching out to a number of needy areas, especially those far-flung areas of which we are struggling as a street now. I think those are some of the few, you know, if you like, heads up that you might wish to touch on coming out of all the submissions from the department, Rainwater, EXA, and the Youth Council in that regard. Let's allow discussion. I saw Mrs. Kekana's hand, Mrs. Baker, Mr. Fasson, Mr. Makondo, Mr. Shellen, and Mrs. Marilla, in that order. Naomi Kani?
Thank you, Chair. Ka mogore tlileng ka mabatlana mane ka jeko potso tsa re tse pedi fela ke lebisile mo Engineer Council of South Africa. Molao wa Engineering Professional Act of o magateletsweng ka 2000 ke goreng mo molaong o osa kalusiwa kago arugana le reo la di engineering mo molaong a go le any plans go petola molao wa engineering mo mo professional act ke o ke tshepo ya tsebo ke di ke bo mo le fatela la question ya ka go le fapha presentation ya lona ke uti le sentle mare ke batla gore ke botsa fela gore le bapha le tlhatlositse ka ga mathata a go tlhokega ga bo di-engineering ka ntlha ya dituelo tse di kwa tlase mo dikopanong tse fetileng re otsetsa se gore go nne le ditomagano yang tsa go ngoka di-professional mo lefapheng a lefapha ga lena ga le akanye go rotloetsa leano la di-rural allowance go ngoka le go dira mo dimasepaleng ke a leboga.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is related to the Department of Water and Sanitation. In previous meetings, there were discussions based on encouraging professionals to get into the department. Now, specifically relating to this, I would like to find out if there are any plans by the department to attract professionals, especially in the rural municipalities, by introducing the rural allowance so that they could be beefed up. This issue is being used in other departments like health and education, where there are extra benefits to attract professionals to work in those areas. If the department can consider that, that would be fine. The second question is related to the Engineering Council of South Africa. In the Act, the Engineering Act, the Professional Engineering Act that was legislated in 2000, there is no definition of the term engineer. So I would like to find out if there are any plans to amend the Act in the offing, because there is no definition of the concept. Maybe if the definition can be attended to, that would give a sense. Thank you.
No questions,
Ms. Sisek. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have to actually say that I'm actually a bit disappointed with the department's response to this report. Actually, if I don't know, I've seen it before, how many times the last generation was in the
Thank you.
in the youth unemployment. The only good thing was 52% of unemployed youth. My concern is really, why are people importing skills? We and as the
whether if you might just answer me that one, yes or no, and then I can ask a question concerning that when I finish here. Hydraulic engineering, do any of our universities give a course in hydraulic engineering? You're not got a problem, Chair, because in a written question to written reply by the minister on the question, the minister answers the following. The majority of the current employed 35 QN engineers are qualified as hydraulic engineers, a field which is not offered in South Africa. You say it is, the department says it's not. The Civil Engineers Society also said they are trained in our country. This is an answer I received on the 5th of June this year concerning we employ these people because they are hydraulic engineers, and in this country we don't train hydraulic engineers. So that is a question to yourselves as well as to the department.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Yeah. I want to firstly indicate that earlier I apologized for the teacher's interest, and you apologize after that. My neighbor here was really offended by the on the code of conduct. What you are telling me that those are not easy. Good idea on the case. There are members of this church in the court room. But anyway, it's fine. I want to talk to, I want to agree with you, Chair, that indeed the National Development Plan, which is South Africa's vision for 2050, will not achieve if we don't have skills. It's a sad decision. But for us, in order to reach that particular vision, we need to have skills. Skills will grow the economy in a rate which is needed. And there's one point, Chair, that I've identified in both the Rainwater and Department in their presentation. I agree with you, Council, that most departments, when they're addressing this issue, they have got a silo mentality. They don't talk to one another. Because if we talk to one another, we are going to have a problem. Of course, we understand the situation where in South Africa, which the Engineering Council will have to make a brief as whether the private sector is involved in terms of the production of these skills. Because in the main, you will find only the public sector, which is the government, which is literally involved in production of these skills. And at the end of the day, because the public sector does not have enough resources in order to retain these kids, and the private sector will just mention like that. But I also think if government departments, they can coordinate, I don't know at what level DG. Because seeing where I am, I think overproduction of these kids could be a solution. We've got QPM here in the country who are in our government. You are able to request as many as you can, simply because there's overproduction in the country. Yeah. And this is not the only problem only in the infrastructure sector, it's also is a problem in the health sector. We have that particular problem. And I think there is a need for government in order to arrive at a particular decision where we deal with this situation once and for all. Because I believe that the development plan will not be achieved by a foreign team. Will not be able to achieve the objective contained in the NDP through the skills which may come from China, Cuba, Ghana, and so forth. We need to build our own skills as a country in order to achieve that. I want to understand from the department. They spoke about the 68 vacant positions which they have from the department. I'm tempted to believe that this might not be the vacancy rate in the department. It could be those that are funded in their organogram. But the other issue that I have is that we have received a report that 88 engineers will be retired, not so long. And that is a cause for concern. I want to understand whether we have got plans to have these engineers, which will be retired, not so long, have them on campus so that they assist in mentoring your graduates that you have in the academy. Because I see potential. And I just hope these are not just engineers. The professional engineer. Sure. The issue with the Engineering Council of South Africa, when I sympathize with them, when it comes to registration of engineers with them, because they are telling us that it's not compulsory that engineers will register with them. And just unfortunate. But the question that I have is what benefit, for example, if I'm an engineer and I'm a register with them, what compels me to do that? Because they don't even at least making sure that these graduates after a particular period get placed in certain industries. I think it's an issue that they need to look into so that they have more numbers, because I'm looking at their presentation here. It's almost 62% that are not registered with them. And I should them also, and I think they should also assist us to respond to that question why they should not register with them. One issue that I think is critical for them, unlike with the various departments that work with engineers, it could be easy for Engineering Council of South Africa chair to track these engineers after they will have registered with them. What skills have they gained after they have left this particular company? And so it was going to be easy, because I understand that they've got an annual subscription with them. It's not going to be easy in order to check that particular skill so that we are able to follow that particular skill to the land, because it is very important. The issue of OSD, I think a particular decision has to be taken with regards to OSD, because the aim of the program, I think, was to make sure that we retain the critical skills that we need to come. but the professionals are leaving to the private market. I think we need to, at that particular level, to look at the benefits and challenges of SOSD, because seemingly it's not assisting us as government to get the intended objectives that we thought it would. Thanks.
Mr. Shalom.
Thank you, Chair. Good thing I won't be long. I'm not going to lose. Chair, I'm looking to the issue of the regulations. Because same thing, or same problem is noticed, I mean, in the process of education, where you find that teachers do not want to go and teach in rural areas. Most of them want to go to urban areas. But are there any incentives that are being sought to attract the good skills or experience of juniors? And then another question, how much can we expect to pay the Cuban engineers? So as one would have a teacher, as we know, the currency is a great concern about PRASA in the country. Why I'm having that question of how much can you expect? Should we consider upgrading our salaries for renovation to engineers in the country? Can we not save? And that question, how long are we going to have these student engineers in the country? Thank you. Thank you. Why do we not have engineers? I mean, it's about 21 years, I mean, we have a constant democracy. Surely we knew long time that we are going to need a say fresh infrastructure development. But today we are saying we don't have people. So when are we going to have the people? Because to me, the issue of the Cuban is about something temporal to address the crisis. But in the long term, what plan do we have exactly that one is convinced? Maybe the next term of government is not going to experience the same. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a contract with them.
that if we take them to school, then they have to wait for the department for the period of 3 years or 5 years before they can go anywhere. Because they are plowing back what they give them. So I think that one must also make sure that we use it so that we also close the gap that we are using. But the other thing, Chair, on the issue of on issues of training, before you become a colonel or somebody else, I was attending the school, LGC, doing this economic development in Spanish. That training, because I didn't hear anywhere where you are saying those people that you are training, where are they doing their practicals? Because as an LGC, you'll be trained by something that they want to have in their society, which they will call it a scarce skill in terms of economic development. Then you do the practical, that's the very same municipality that is having that challenge. You start your project from that municipality until it's finished. I start a project of chicken project, start targeting those people who are going to run that project until it ends up. Till today, that project, the most people are waiting. But I don't understand where these people who are trained by the Rainbow South Department, where are they doing their practical, because we are having challenges in municipalities. You know, I'm talking about municipalities because everything that is around water, whether it's the municipal function or what, it's the first to the department. You end up taking the money that you use like for to assist the municipality. So what are we doing to address those challenges? And can't the department always go and bail out the municipalities? Because it's a challenge of South Africans in terms of where we know that voting is a challenge in our country. So I just want to check with all the department, the regulators, what are you doing? The money is going out. Take money, train people, but you should still face by this challenge of against citizens. What you are talking about. And also, the thing, are we a developing country? Are we a developing country? We are not developed. What is our plan? Are we going in the other areas going to talk about this engineering? Because we are saying most of the skilled engineers are not going to pension. So what is the plan of moving the other ones to take part of where these old ones are living? So, because I don't know where is your plan, because you train and take it to Braga and UNF, and you don't have to say, the others are okay, they are going and then you're going to stop, but you have spent your money training some people. Those are my questions. Thank you.
So let's conclude with Mankaula and
and the bond is Kala. Over Mijre, since it is a EOTM Langa Pambi. I want to take my opinion that the Zundian are called the Kulimic who paid against the Buddha and the Gulabaga Renwald. The Shoskala is said, Uguti, Imat Lamakaya. Go as the Kaja and the Sakisa Uno Kaja. That is. And so that she looked at one of her days, lunch every day and day. Go back in Kinga, Econa. No one can answer that Latin. Nicola Mandy, need the Nitan, then it's not that was my school, my young consulate, consulate, she had been a cool chabula and the school then there, it was soon better with the gober. The look at Asho and Kulimanga, I would only look at Osho look at him. She had Kulimanga, the machines of Kutasha Band, who said to him as it won't go down. Gober Nabo, Labo engineer, Boma Tenaker, Nababa Fundisa in Sedin, and Kundit Lababa Fundisa in Sedin. Gabra Fundiswa, Koma College, Nenbonacon, and FET, 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 Labo bantu ekuleni bagcina behlale phansi lakho singambonga umhlisho amdonga phansi ngaphambili. Bagcina behlale ekhaya bokuqeqesha nibaqeqesha khona. Azagcina umuntu eseyeka manje lomsebenzi awuqeqeshelwa ungena kungawufuni. Nibona kukhona onesi ekuthiwa bawenza umsebenzi ngokungendlela yabo nomothi nje amaphoyisa. Yingoba kuthi lo msebenzi akade vele ewufundele agcine engasawutholi. Eseyongena emsebenzini angavele eseyifonsile anganalo uthando lawo. And yile laba bantu enibaqeqeshayo bagcine bazoba yinkinga futhi thina emphakathini angithebanikezile uqeqesho lwamanzi. Seninanikezile uqeqesho lukagesi kanjalo ney'moto bazositshontsheni iy'moto zethu bazoti ngoba nibaqeqeshile phela nibanike umsebenzi. Kanjalo futhi nabo ugesi nabuya futhi kugesi ugesi bazozani bazositshontshela ugesi wethu. Kanjalo nakumanzi bayabuya la. Mina nje nganginekhesi lapho ekhezetela enkulu kabi yabantu abaqeqeshwe yilo mhlobo yenikhuluma ngabo ngokunxa yokuthi umsebenzi awutholi. Kuthotha ukuthi uyakwazi ukuthatha imikhaya yakho ngokuthi ufunde lambe untshontsha amanzi azithole uwonshunezinto enkulu. Ngiqonde ukuthi zizinto funanezeke ukuthi niyazenza la bantu aniqeqeshele ukuthi lo mkonto ukuthi ibuyizwe egwazi badlulalo. Okwesibili kufana nale nto abantu bangaphandle enikhuluma ngabo bokuthi nibaqeqeshe banithi mina aninankinga nabo edlombu nje lesesikezi ngabe siyayibona yini le nto ebizwa ngokuthi i-council la e-South Africa ye-youth engasebenzi elawo ama-skills neqeqeshe nalo lezisesikezi ngoba mina angikhoni ukukhohlisa kunikhohlisa mina ngiyakuphika ukuthi la e-South Africa bonke lapha makhalada belungu amandiya abekho labo bantu. Nina shonini ngokucacela ukuthi la e-South Africa anifuni ukuyibona i-South Africa iya phambili. Anifuni ukutshaya la ibona la phambili. Kuphela into ebalulekile kuyitala ukuthi izidakamizwa igcine seyinto engapheli. Niyayibulala i-South Africa. Bengicabanga ukuthi next time lento enixoxeni kahle. Ngoba wena uma usuka la manje uyaphesheya, uyofika wena uyoba uGarden Boy, uyoba uJohn wena. Siqedile uJohn ngase-South Africa, uyoba uJohn kwamanye amazwe. Kanjalo uma umama uyobani uJosephine lowashamanamukele nabonalento esikazi futhi nempela i-21 years musendilala ngathi bafethu kanikoyikhulela ama-college yazo lawo yini umsebenzi wabo kunjalo ungcono kakhulu isayabala nakusele ukuthi asifunakazinawesi isikhathi sizosixoxa ngale nto zenu nobuchwepheshe while abantu bebelambile befuna amanzi kufika abantu abanawo amanzi kunezinto ofuna zikhulumamente vele kuhambe kukhulunywa umndaba amanzi lokho kwenobezenisitshela kwi-South Africa yini inkinga nizonje kangaka. Ngiyabonga.
Please tell us which rural areas are you referring to, because we are tired of you coming here and deceiving us, as this is always the case with all of you. You are going speaking, and at the end of the day, people in the rural areas are never ever trained. Indeed, engineers themselves and the technicians are trained, but are never employed. They then come back and ill in the community, and they cut the pipes and even the electrical pipes, because they are well trained to do this. They even steal our cars. It's the same as this thing of appointing people from other countries while our youth are languishing in streets unemployed. This is uncalled for because our kids are unemployed and are busy doing stuff. I wonder if you realize that there is crisis in South Africa and the youth languishing in streets, not working. And if they are employed outside South Africa, they become outcasts there and domestic workers. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Unfortunately, I've got more than one cap. Maybe I should declare now before I continue. I am an engineer, I am a council member of the Engineering Council of South Africa as well. And I think we should just understand that. Chair, the issues of skills in the right places, especially in public service, we are going to continue and have problems as long as also the issue of remuneration is not attended to. As long as issues relating to the factor of urban and rural, because people that have spent 3 years, 4 years in the university, when they get a job, they will prefer to go to urban settings where their children can have schools, they can have access to amenities and all this. And it always poses a problem to the issues of the rural area. And I just need to indicate that is always, will always present a problem. And then there was a question that was raised to Home Affairs, is why are we importing fields? I think it's just a simple response to the National Development Plan, that we must facilitate the acquisition of critical skills. We must just simply differentiate skills and critical skills. Because currently, the question of importing skills is related to the current infrastructure development. We are spending millions now, and you need certain specific persons that have been trained in specific fields that you don't have in the country. Then you can't stop the infrastructure development, hence the importation of those specific skills to deal with this. But that importation does not stop our institutions that are supposed to be producing graduates, and the private sector as well as the public sector, that must provide the experiential team that is required and the mentorship for a body like the EXA to be able to assess the competence of those people for purpose of registration. I think that is what should be understood. Maybe the CEO of EXA maybe should explain a little bit more on the value chain of producing skilled and competent persons. Because you are talking about institutions like universities or technologies, the FETs, that must actually give this particular education. Then you have the private sector and the public sector that must provide the experience of training so that these people gain their competence. And that should be made clear. Chairperson, my few questions is let me start by saying, when I read the presentations, it looks like everybody everywhere is creating some sort of academy and training people. And then there is no coherence, there is no synchronization. And as we have heard, is that where you have the people that are involved in constructing infrastructure for purposes of servicing public, there must be a level of assurance that infrastructure will give service to people and will not become danger to people. If you have people that have to design the water purification plants from rainwater, and those that are operating those purification plants, there must be some sort of assurance that the plant will continue to exist and the water produced there, it is fit for human consumption. And then the registration then comes a little bit a critical issue, and that needs to happen. Now the question that arises is, the people that we are training in these specific academies and the rest, is there any intention that we really need to make sure that they are registered and that they are professionals, so that we give assurance to the public on the work that, on the service that they are rendered to people? And then the other issues to check with Water Affairs and Rainwater Forces, how frequent do they engage the Engineering Council, and as well as the South African Institution of Civil Engineering, in relation to these practitioners in this particular sector? And then also to say from the Department of Water and Sanitation, there was a report that was issued by Dr. Anton Dollars on numbers and needs on engineers. And that document has been distributed to all the departments. And now the question is, whether they have actually seen this particular report and what were their response to it. Then the other, I think the last one, of course, is that I think that's the one that I've started with, that I heard from the youth council, because when they were presenting, it looked like they were of the opinion that the engineering council is actually training and producing engineers and the rest. That is not the case. Their job is to assess competence, and when they are satisfied, then they actually declare that the person is competent in a specific area that the person wants to register. I think those are the few chairperson, and on that call, Chair, I would also like to request that I have a meeting at 12 o'clock. Maybe if I could just simply be released straight away, and those that are here would assist me to get the responses from another person. Thanks.
Those are a few questions and comments. I did mention to you that that our last session we had together with the Water and Sewage Commission. I'm going to have a question about the end product of your trained engineer, what happens and the commitment to the report. For us to be able to get the feedback from the project as to how best do you then address that problem. The problem is that it's not very difficult for the public to finish up the funds next as they wish. And I think part of the audience will be very much more able to get to the need for you in structure that is happening in the public service. For a number of other sections or centers, this to help a profession becomes just one example on top of the heads. Whether that is going to be equal the number of those that are, number of years that are in training, the state of Colorado government, it's a teacher. And I think those are a few points that the last part of March I must make. Is an example just as a way of comment. So the Indian government, they have a system where they just 1 million IT projects. So the culture program is taken in partnership with the government and the institution of Thailand. Hence, they are able, their subgroups, to provide the world. So it is something that is consciously engaged upon. And there's no confusion of that. And again, the point of saying that you are to take yourself as a government of the country. You have these objectives by 2030. The vision tells you this shall happen. Employment, quality, and culture. With all the requisite skills, you will be able to achieve. One of our members is talking about our silo mentality. And the silo mentality is understood in the context of your respective departments and agencies that are involved. And your performance appraisal. As a department, you have a part of your key performance areas. You need to achieve this much. Now, you owe it to your, if you like, your bonus. You get there. For you to be able to be all over, wanting to establish what else is doing, the same thing I'm doing, it waste of time. I would imagine that's what preoccupies your mind.
My time here starts from year to year. And I don't have an extra time for me to be able to be all over touching the food and do the same thing I'm doing. I am going to go with them and continue to meet the field, reinforcing that style of mentality. And perhaps this is a matter that has to be stated. There is an example wherein there must be such an agreement that style of mentality is not seen on the labor board. Instead, we are not stressing the rank. Because we always talk about do more with less. But we continue to do less with more. That's what is happening every skill now. And the deficit that we have, the 15 years, that clock that we run out. So that's because that reinforcement of having to do less with more is going to continue unabated until we are able to come to a point where as Clement you are to say it ends here now. Going forward, this is how as Clement we are going to come together and be able to coordinate and consolidate. All these are nuances, whether it has to do with pension strategy, pensions, and all those other skills. Those are the skills you might be looking into. And clearly, also what we are here talking about is a point raised by, I think, Mr. Masile, wherein we are all doing the same thing. Everybody wakes up, let's have an academy. Let's have an academy. An academy. Whether it is really indeed Taylor's fault, big question mark. A number of them are not here. Correctly, so education would have been here, expected, labor would have been here. So let's assume that this is our first engagement. So that we are able to go forward with our plans and be able to really begin to say, what is it exactly that we want to achieve at the end of the day? Starting from this engagement of today.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you for the comments and the questions. I'll start off, but I'm sure that the other presenters will also add their voice as well as Julia and any other member of the class who wish to add. Chair, I want to begin with your envy. There are a number of other sector departments that are implicated in the question that you have to ask. The first is the Department of Higher Education, Further Higher Education, because they provide the training, the graduate and diploma training for engineering science. It is not the department that does that. So if there's a failing on the part of higher education in ensuring that there are sufficient number of graduate engineers and hunters, then it puts us at a disadvantage. Try as we may, we will not be able to recruit sufficiently. The Minister Zamani, as a matter of fact, appeared before the portfolio committee not so long ago, and he indicated that he is not meeting the target. So I want to put that before you. So in terms of the pool from which we are borrowing, there's already a deficit. So the department and all of our agencies will be implicated as well. The second point, which I just want to emphasize, and it relates to the questions that were asked by both Member Kekani and Member Baker, which relates to the issue of remuneration that is being asked. And Member Mkondo referred to it. The response of the public sector, and the GCSA in particular, is to try and retain those scarce skills and critical skills by way of occupational specific distinction. Now, the question is,
is it adequate, and have we initiated such discussions further with the DPSA? Because occasionally we'll react to the DPSA's directives. The decision is made by the Minister of Public Service and Administration. It is an ongoing issue. There is a feeling that we have tried as much as we could in terms of remunerating for this scheduling. Chair, we were in a similar position we came to CFOs not so long ago in the country, where we were asking for chartered accountants to become our CFOs, and we could not compete with the private sector because there were so few CAs. We had to work many years. It took up to 15 years to do what Member Gondo says we must do. You need to fill up the market with that skill so that it's not scarce anymore. But I thought that was what the CEO of Oxa was saying. It takes a number of years to get to a point where you are at that. Of the vacant 68, Joe says there are about 10 that are in the chief and higher order registration requirements. Those will be people that work on our Class A bands, where the requirement and the risk is too huge one for us to take to put junior engineers there, to design them, to ensure that the construction meets the requirements, the specifications of the regulatory environment, as the CEO has indicated. Those are high order skills that we are asking. It takes a while to get there. We have a program for candidate engineers. We take them on board. True. We train them. The problem that we have with even the candidates is that more than often they have to extend the candidature. Because to write a board exam is such an onerous task for them. And I have some difficulties with it myself. I think we should enroll us for 3 years. I have said, and it costs me money to put you through your phases. So I also put pressure on them to ensure that they're able to make the grade. But I also often have to extend their candidature because of that ask that we have, which is correct. We have to set long-term standards for those engineers because of the risk of the dam wall not being put in place correctly, it collapsing, and the risk of life and limb. So Joe tries to put into context our program that we have to take on candidates, engineers, to train them up, and we only have the OSD to retain them. But if there is a dearth of the skill, if it's scarce and continues to be scarce, not only am I competing with my own agencies and water boards who need that, and municipalities who need that, but the private sector is also, and then the private sector this day with a big checkbook. I am not able to negotiate as an accounting officer singularly when it comes to issues of remuneration and fabulous and retention package. That is a DPSA function. The director comes from the DPSA. I can certainly raise my concerns with the DG and say, please can we have a discussion with the view that is placed on your table so that you can take it forward. But the OSD is not having the desired impact of retaining. But I want to put some other matter on the table, Chair, for you as a member. I don't believe the retention of skill is only about remuneration. It is about becoming an employer of choice. I think if you pay me and you just announce an increment for me and all other members of management, if I'm not happy in my job, you can pay me my 5%, which you won't keep for a long time. I will leave. So the conditions must be set in so that even I, of course, I must make a living. I must have a good level of standard of living. I'm not going to argue with that. We all want to be in comfortable surroundings. But if in my mind I think I must get rich in the public sector, I'm the wrong sector. I say that to people that I work with. You're not going to get rich. I've been in the public sector for 21 years. You've not retained me the money. You've retained it because I get job satisfaction. And that is often ignored when we talk to people that come into the public sector. Because when people are desperate for work, all they want is to give me a job. But you are there. All they do is start to moan about how bad it is and how they are not paying them correctly. element belongs to the inclusive housing sector. Let's talk about an engineer. It is not enough to only have a qualification in engineering and come to our doors and say, I want a job. We have to follow the process. People go through an interview process. People go through an assessment process. And that basket of assessment says, we will employ you. Is it exactly about this person who comes and says, I have a goal, and you, therefore you must employ me because it's a skill and critical skill? There's no way in the world that that is the only thing that you must have. There is a match and assessment process as well. We must have the right people in the public sector. We must have the right people. So to say, and I say, Minister of Higher Education says, I am at the creative for your school. So the 25,000 that member of the fund mentioned, that is available, I don't know where they are. I also want to know, because you create advertisements and show in through and say, it is such a poor response, in some instances, we have no responses for education. None. Whatsoever. So I'm not sure where I am. But I suppose they've decided it is not in the public sector that we want to work. I suppose the 25,000 can say, I don't want to work there. It is very possible. I don't know. But what I do know is the threat advertisement, the responses are poor, and those that are applying are not of the quality that we need. I must also say that. There's also a poor quality. Not all doctors are doctors. You don't just pick a doctor because your doctor, I'm going there. We all decide, that is a good doctor. I'm going to go to that doctor. We even have specialists that met us. And we say, no, I'm not going to be ready to finish, but you're not a good specialist. So I think those are things that we must also consider in our conversation. That yes, you may have a graduate, but they are not ideal. They are not, I say this with due respect, they are not employable. And I'm not just going to take anybody just because you say, but I have a degree in engineering. So I think I'm a bit broadening it a little bit in terms of what it is that they are based. We want people, we want engineers, we want good engineers, and we want converted engineers. I don't want to train our people when all they are doing is using the base of the public sector to then leave and go. I can also say, I'm never ever going to be able to remunerate equally as private sector. It's not possible. The state doesn't have that kind of money to pay people millions of pounds. It's not possible to do that. It will cost us. It's unaffordable, actually, is what I want to say. But we must have retention strategies. OSV is one of, but I would also work hard at creating conditions where people feel they are making a contribution for the betterment. And if you are geared towards that kind of setting in your career, then I must work at making sure that I'm able to create those conditions for you. The issues around the academy, I'm going to ask Joe to speak a little bit more, but I will not dispute that they are, it's kind of a dime a dozen, and we must work in an integrated fashion to ensure that we're able to work in synergy, rather than compete, everyone having an academy and competing for space in an area, and duplicating those kinds of infrastructure and also the resource, human resource requirements to actually run those academies. We are the first time, chairperson and members, going to have a joint strategic planning session with all water boards and all entities in the department together with us. I say that with no fear of contradiction. It has never happened in this sector for the 21 years. I can't believe why. I don't know why. Landwater will have its strategic plan. Departments will have its strategic plan, and never the twin shall harm each other. It is wrong. We've agreed on it. And I have my first session with the CE, and we are going into a joint planning session with the view that it identifies the priorities, and that the water board and entities that are extensions of the department align to the department's priorities, and not. Then what to decide their priority because they have a board, and therefore the department with the minister and deputy minister decide this is the priority. Their extension, and they have one shareholder. That shareholder is the minister. So she has the right to dictate through our agreement with the board what priorities should be. for the next year and the next 3 years over the MTA effect. So that's what we are going to do, and that session happens on the 23rd, I think. So I can even say that when it's going to happen over 2 days. And I'm optimistic that when we do that joint planning, I will also have discussion in terms of what train facilities do you have? Why must I have it? Why must you have it Percy? Why can't we have one? Percy is just down the road from us. Why must there be 3 academies in one space? So those things are the areas that I think we can certainly explore cheaper. With regard to the issue of absorption around our interns, we've learned a lot from Hassan's mix. Let me touch a little bit on the War on Leaks program that is driven by Land Water. We had long discussions. What happens with these 15,000 artisan plumbers that we are going to train? There isn't 15,000 vacancies that we have. And what we said is we will work with all of our water boards. Also, the point that you raised, people don't want to walk into a position in a department or in a water board. They want gainful opportunities. So we are also developing entrepreneurs, and we're working with the Department of Trade and Industry to ensure that they also then come on board to the facilitate. And one of the members said, where we are able to provide the startup, we must be able to do that, we must be able to give them the necessary equipment. And already saying that where some of those artisans and plumbers say, I want to start a plumbing enterprise, then we are going to be able to provide them. I think it was the youth council that mentioned. So we do have that also in our concept papers. But most certainly, we are going to identify all the water boards, all the municipalities in terms of their vacancies, so that we also ask them to absorb some of those that are going to work in their spaces. And we'll remember that part of the conceptualization check is that we will recruit from local government, so that those people are recruited there, are trained there where possible in our institutions for further education, and then also absorbed in those areas. So the idea is also to create the job opportunities in those specific areas, not to take people from Johannesburg and to then go and say you might go to Pristina Nevada. Because Pristina Nevada has their own youth there, they are unemployed. So we are recruiting from the ranks of them. In some way, the other related sector is rural development. Rural development has to develop, our policy is to develop those rural areas. And but the fact of the matter is we are not doing it fast enough. Because we can see figures on immigration into the urban areas. And many of you mentioned it. Youth, people who graduate, don't want to work in those rural areas. Because they see it as underdeveloped. They see the glamour of the life, city life. So there's a huge immigration into the urban areas. The way that we can reverse it, of course, is to develop those rural areas as well. And then to create opportunities in those rural areas for people who have gainful employment. So we're doing our work by saying, let's employ and recruit the interns there. Don't bring them to Johannesburg and don't take those from Johannesburg there as well. By the way, the Cuban 35 engineers and scientists, all of them are placing roles. Because as much as I'm saying, I don't even receive applicants for the positions that are there. I receive even yet when I indicate that the vacancy is in the role. So we have placed the Cuban engineers, and they have willingly gone there to impart their skill, to impart their knowledge, and to impart their experience to those that are in that particular sector. Let me also say that none of the Cubans are occupying a vacancy. They are here on an exchange. Like you will have exchanges, I have exchanges from Japan, I have exchanges from the Netherlands. They would come on shorter periods. In this instance, they're here for 2 years to impart their skills. The remuneration is not higher than any of the others. We are paying them at a rate of 532,278 over per annum. So that is what they are earning at the moment. as we are not being at an exorbitant amount of money beyond what we would offer an engineer. All of them have gone through our SAC process, so the qualification has been endorsed by SAC and all of them have in excess of 10 years of experience. They have come here to share what they have. And if you have visited Cuba recently, you know that they have some of the most excellent operations in terms of their water and sanitation. And some of it is extremely old. Extremely old. But it's the way in which they operate those, that infrastructure. So it is a chance of missing that delicacy already from it. I think let me pause there. I thought I dealt with some of it at the high level. Specific ones, I will certainly ask my colleagues to
thank you, Kiji. Thank you, Chair. I think
Sherry, continue. Do not forget to comment on the commitment of the department and also what has just mentioned of what happened after training, so that the private sector must make it the way of operation. Yes.
Okay. Before I come to your question on the update of as to what happens after time, I think, Chair, the committee probably did it from the committee is fully aware of this, but in 2012 we went wholesale and advertised posts and asked people to converge to second hand. I think they have advertised only 550 posts at that particular time of various levels. One day I was in the office chair and I asked my director of recruitment, I said, please bring me the box so that they've got all the CVs for chief engineer, professional engineer, specialist engineer, and so on. Because there were so many boxes of application. The boxes actually never came, and I was asking as to what the question happened to the boxes, because I requested the boxes, and was told point blank that we didn't receive applications. Not even a single. Actually, at Pretoria West showground, we had almost plus or minus 12,000 to 15,000 people. So long, I still have to teach it. So the issue of urban and rural, it's a big issue. I spoke to one engineer who's going to retire actually next year. I the chief engineer, I said, look, you need to be part of our program to mentor young people. And the first thing that he said was, you see, if I was mentoring in Pretoria at head office, I'll do it. But the problem is to mentor on site. See how old I am. Only not even right. So that is the kind of problem that actually you have when you talk about it. Actually, even goes even to younger ones. One case actually was completing his registration with EXA as an engineering technologist, so a technician. And he came to me to complain to say that we are sending him to some place where even never been. And I have to really sit down to say, look, bro, you have to go there, that is where the need is, for you to be able to go there, because now you're at a higher level to be able to supervise and carry on this particular project. It's a big issue that actually we really need to address. I really want to talk about the issue of the rural incentive. That is something that more or less we really need to pursue the department together with the details. Because I think for us, that's something that can have an impact in it. When you talk about the run out, to say you are sacrificing and going to that particular area, there are no malls, there are no car roads, and there are lots of mosquitoes still to the and so on and so forth. You know, we are able to incentivize and move in that particular place. Yeah? Yeah. so chair, that is something that actually we can pursue. As the DG has said, the DPSA is the custodian of innovation in the public sector. Wouldn't want to start something right, because then that will cause a lot of problems within the sector. But we'd like to engage with the help of the committee, with the DPSA, to say this is probably one of our interventions as far as making sure that at least the skills go. Now, as far as your question with regard to as to where do people go, we have got high retention in the department as far as scientists are concerned. This I can say. Those that qualify and register for scientists, they stay longer. It's maybe one or two people that actually has actually, you know, left the department. For example, we have about 67 registered certified natural rangers in the department. About 65 of those are still in the department. We have registered engineering technicians for 12 today. Those actually are still in the department. The problem for us is when someone actually registered as a professional engineer, of which currently we have 3. That is where the bigger issues for us start, because then the person sees the prospective outside to say, you know, if I was working for this construction company, I would be aiming. I've heard actually in February one of the persons, one of our graduates in me, who came to us, this was actually on the 26th of February with EXA. He came straight to my office and said, it's time for salary raise. Forget about all this, just give me what I want. You know, so he had an offer actually from some company, and that offer actually was above the range that I would normally give as a professional, newly registered professional engineer. So he brought that, and that became the big issue. The day actually he registered. So that's the big challenge. But at the scientist level, we are the same already. But the challenge is engineering, once someone becomes a professional engineer, is a big certificate, it's a big issue. It's something that actually at the DGF said we really need to address also with other departments to see actually how we deal with that. But I think the big issue that for us as a department that we want to do, you have mentioned something to say that look, there is a need for conversion as far as the learning academies are concerned. We are already actually working with Rainwater as the linear academy and in the department. Actually, we also assisted Rainwater in the establishment of the academy. The streams are different. I think Rainwater is much more on the artisan side of training. Our stream is much more on the professional, high level side of training, where actually we want people to graduate to be specialist engineers, professional engineers, and chief engineers. But I agree that probably the need for conversions, we are actually able to put in the resources to have a much more wider impact. That is where actually I can stop.
Thank you, Deputy. I think to committee members, I think the DG painted a very good picture in terms of the high level of what we have, but perhaps to give it a different stand as well. I think one needs to start here, and I think the DG has addressed this. The Department of Higher Education and Training, the Department of Labor, actually, if one looks at the National Skills Development Strategy, I think we're only 3 now. Most of the concepts that are in the would have not required some of us to have academies if the rollouts were aligned to the way they are supposed to look at the requirements of the country. But as well, I need to also say it's perhaps not entirely their fault, so to speak. But an individual as an accounting office, I've always looked at this and this, but what is our African strategy? And well, perhaps this is the right platform to have, if I can have used a bit in terms of that thing. I'm looking at Parliament and areas that I'm saying, before we had the National Development Strategy, for a long time our National Development Plan, there had been this thing where, and I'm also looking at the new founder, to say, In terms of the education, what do people study? In terms of higher education, what do people say? Because there has to be a correlation between the country's needs and where the country's going with the kind of skills that you need to create. At this stage, our discussions have just been on, we already have unemployed graduates, but what did they study at the baseline? Because you need to work on that to say the country is going this way, and therefore I need to have the skills so that we don't say we're sitting with over 50% of unemployed youth. So there has to be that correlation. I think the government is moving in the right direction now. Now that there's a plan in terms of the NDP, and we need to align with that. And I think it's important to actually look at the base requirements in terms of provision of things like water and sanitation. But on the other side, as a country, we need to know, all of us need to know, this is where the country is headed in terms of the strategy, and these are the tools that further education institutions need to be providing. Then we won't find ourselves in this kind of situation sometimes. But I am ready to say, from where I sit, sometimes I am trying to see that movement that goes to what they need. We need to be moving from point A to point B, and this is the kind of skills that we need. And some of the skills need to be put together and developed over time, because for the other question area that related to us in the world, that says, how do we assure that if we open that heaven, then that will take us there? For somebody to be competent enough to do that, for somebody, for Ella to say, you are now a PR engineer, you go through a particular process to get there. But I think it's important for us to now say, that's why we are working together with the educational institutions as well, to make sure that we're working in tandem with them. But I just need to get closer to some of the issues that we're raising. And just to allay the fears that were raised by some of the committee members, we do have within the technical space legislated training. That would mean for everybody that's doing the on the technical side, they have to go through particular training that is legislated for them to be able to operate our plant or looking at refining our water. And that's not the only thing that we're looking at. In terms of the water quality, actually protected from the South African standard from a point of view of what we do on our side. And I think for the department as well, in their strength, some, the whole issue behind the blue drop and green drop methodology, in terms of coming with the data and saying, this is this particular institution or municipality, the water quality is of a particular level. It's not just testing the water quality. The methodology also looks at the skills of the people that are actually operating there. So it's a holistic approach in terms of this. So when somebody from the department declares that this is blue drop, they met the blue drop standard, they're not only looking at the outcome, they're also looking at the process and also the skills that are used for that and the plan, because they look at the long-term plan to say, what are you going to do to address this gap? And so it's sort of a methodology, that's why, like I said. And again, maybe perhaps on the issue of us losing skills to the private sector, there are two ways of looking at it. On one side, as an accounting officer of the water board, I have to keep water available. Now, which means the overhead of people that are keeping the organization are quite important. On one side, if I have all these professional engineers that now come after going through this extra process, and now they want this kind of salary, that's going to make water quite expensive for me to afford them. That is why you always have two parallel processes. On one side, the skills that we keep within the organization, some they go into the private sector. We go through the process of putting tenders out, and if you have the right people with the right qualification, which CCIC will take care of in terms of the other process, are those people that would come and do the specialized work. Because there is the construction, but there's also the operation and maintenance. So in most cases, we keep the operating and operations and maintenance of most of the skills that we need, although we do have engineers in there. But those that go into the private sector, they still work with the public sector from a point of view of ensuring that at that particular point, you have the skills that are at the right level for the work that has been done, and they have to pass the master in terms of having the extra qualification. So it's not all doom and gloom to say some of the people are going to the private sector. It's just the methodology, and we need to understand how that works. Because ultimately for us, if we keep them in the overhead are such that now, I have to now increase the cost of water to make sure that we can afford all these people that are doing our work, especially those that are professionally coming by. But we're saying we need to have that as a balance. And I do agree that although we try to address this issue of rural allowance, I think one of the committee members mentioned that, but we are saying as well that we try to make sure that there's a back-to-back agreement between the training that we have to give and the people operating in certain areas that we talked about. And we do as well in terms of the training, provide practical. I think that's one of the issues that came up. For us, we do get the people trained and operating on the railway infrastructure, but as well, the appropriate municipality where they are going to be placed, they also work there. It's also under supervision and mentorship in terms of making sure that they're able to catch. So we do subscribe to that as well. And what we're saying is, we do have the point, I think, that came from Mom Kaula, where she was saying, if people are not employed, then we tend to actually be the ones that tend to fever in terms of vandalizing the very public infrastructure they need to look after. I think it's something that has to be looked at, but what we're saying is, for us in the area where we operate, I refer to rural development, and I was asked to actually highlight the areas where we're doing it. It needs to be mentioned that this is also related to the areas where the trend was also operating. And so I have the DG's right in terms of saying, we need to have a consolidated view, because as we sit here, we're talking about areas where we're not operating. Yeah, there's the old area, which is the old housing, where you have a lot of metros that are coming. But in the areas where we operate, because I want to ask that question, which parish, municipality, Palestine, Emalachin, Govan, Legim, Sugaliwa, Tendisil. But in terms of the deep rural areas, we actually even assisted some areas in Lepen and Mudimoli. So those are the areas where we say that the deployment of helping everybody, those are the areas that we have gone into in terms of the programs that we use. But I think your question is still valid from at another level what we do. But I think the important thing is the DG mentioned the One List program. But as well, we have to try and balance the issue of the amount of people that are unemployed and the spaces that are available in terms of meaningful work as well. Because you need to meet the two, and in our case, you still need to make sure that water remains affordable. So I think I've tried to answer some of the areas and the questions that we need to ask as well.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, for the opportunity to answer some questions. I think it's quite a number of them, but I'll try to be very short and concise for the first two came from the position chair. You asked the question, how are we exactly working on the system for this one? Yes, we are in a position in terms of the engineering profession tax. And who regulates us? That is a bit of a difficult one. We have above us the Council for the Federation of Government, which supports human resources. And their function is to promote and voice up certain standards. The next question came from the youth. Some of them refers to the public sector doing for any number of 2021 unemployment allegation. Yes, we try to do certain things, even though we are located in a position of being a refugee. One of the things that we established, to give an example, was to establish a trust for contributing towards the Pantai Fund for the students to get funding. And again, it comes back to the issue of do we provide education, do we create the educational program, or we stand far from playing that game. So we created a body that is independent. And we were about to really serve the students these are initiatives that are being taken around here to make sure that we can do this to our country. Then
The other question was, any plans to review the engineering profession, in particular, to the division of the engineering? I was privileged to serve as the chairperson of the Council for the Creative Faculties in 2015, and we worked quite closely with then many of our people to amend the legislation that I meet us in with we really looked into the legislation. We had a disagreement between Professional Council and government. Quite a wide variety of disagreements. Even in Kenya, we can't talk to the minister. I think you have to piece of this together. Successfully lobby some of the members of the executive this legislation. And it didn't take off. So if we disagree in with uptake or in the screen, it becomes a difficult to get this legislation. So just have to see what it is that we can do, what we have. And hence we are coming with the issue, the notion that the district utilize treasury to force current law that we have is quite old, it's outdated, and it's got a certain number of weaknesses. I won't go into this, but one of them is the issue of engineering. What is it that you're talking about? What is the fundamental essence of this project that can define an engineer? So I just hope and I pray that the lawmakers may prioritize the amendment. So then the next question about retirement of engineers. Look, the sum of it in the last 3 years, we end up having, we are growing about 2,000 engineers a year across all categories of education. We reached about 5,000, but this is about 2,000 or so. So we get up to 2,500. We currently have 46,000 we hope that by next year, then 48,000 But I think your question is more about for those who get out of the system, why? What are the issues? First of all, go out because of the natural attrition, die, and prevent that from happening. Others will have to walk out because they find no incentive to remain registered. So I'm not going to give you the ratio of exit. How many people are in the number of others leave the country and when they are working elsewhere and they choose not to retain their registration with that, you can't do that about that. Others decide to what they get to retirement age and choose not to continue to. So there's a variety of reasons why people do. But there's one that I must touch on. There is a number of people that come and register from right from school that can be the young ones. And they come into the system because they hope that by being registered with candidates, that gives them better opportunities to be employed. And when they don't get employed, they also lose courage to continue to retain their interests. So those are the issues. There was a question about the Washington Accord. The Washington Accord is an accord, it's an educational accord, for people who are qualified to be a student. There are two accords that Ezra has ended up with. One is called the Sydney Accord for people who are intended to be graduates to become college students, and then the W Accord. It's got nothing to do with the within the devices of the complete of Washington or the Assembly or nothing. So that is a good guy. basically one thing in the accord is recognition that if you archive a certain education program in your country, then they also created the other programs that are equivalent, then there is a recognition of those accreditation to the outcome. So, recognition of such recognition of those programs. That's a long talk. It was signed in Washington, a number of countries have announced the Washington Accord. Do they choose and subscribe to that? No. They are not in the Washington. They are not members of the International Engineering Alliance. But does it mean they are short of anything, or they are superior, or what? I don't know. Every application that comes our way, we first evaluate the content of the education qualification of an individual, irrespective of the country it comes from. Whether it's Cuba or Zimbabwe or whatever, it doesn't matter. Just to receive the application, test it against the qualifications that we have in terms of this content, and if they even keep equivalent of those qualifications, then you pass to the next course to be accepted for completing. And if you pass from the course, then you'll be registered in India. And once you are registered, you adhere to this provision to pay your subscription fee. You must abide by the code of conduct, and you must get into the accreditation. We are not discriminating. There's a lot of people, I think myself can say this. You know what the Cuban issue came about? When we discuss with the council of the national office, we ended up saying, look, let's not discuss Cuba, let's discuss foreign engineers. Because if you narrow it to Cuba, then it takes a certain narrative that you may not actually intend to focus on. It's not our role to discriminate people on the basis of their origin. And I can assure you, out of these 46,000 that are in the country, about 2,300 foreigners. There are two Cuban engineers who are registered in South Africa who came with one direction. They are still in 2009. They applied to register. The number of them that applied who could not go through this referendum, but there are two that have succeeded and got registered. They've left the country. I don't know whether they still registered. I didn't check that. But I wonder why I was saying that the situation is South Africa if I'm in Cuba and I don't go into council. Why would I hear that here they could have come back to Africa in a country where I don't intend to go in council? Okay. At a personal level. But I don't know why it's happening with the institution. You said the institution in such a society has pronounced unavailability of skilled people. Yes, I heard that. We meet with them quite regularly because they are one of the biggest. And they also asked what the situation of the engineers, the people that appear that after the qualification sometimes come from this university. So they told us about this, but it's not our case. It's not for us to determine the number of people that are. The way one gets employed by whom, from what conditions, it's not really that. That's what I can imagine to my. And the next one, thank you very much. On the minister's response, yeah, I can't comment on this one. I've never seen the minister say, I don't know what to say, what is wrong, right? I really can't comment on this one. I said, like, what all the steps that I can make is for. There's an issue about the offense on the pictures that was seen. Thank you very much, Honorable for accepting my offer. May I just raise the issues? We're going to have teacher representation. Like informed by the national office, a teacher paints 1,000 words. Some people use a pie. And just by looking at the pie, you already see the portion of things. So we tend to look for pictures and put them in because they will explain what everyone is in a simplistic way. But I apologize because this piece is the fourth. The first one that we had to do this work was related to engineers. But we have chosen not to be registered. Who are other registered. And they're having their own squabble. And they say, look, you see, if you're not regulated, this is the outcome.
They came to my office complaining about the Sanctuary. Sanctuary to a code of conduct, a human being, because the code of conduct is about the conduct of human beings, not the conduct of any man. So there will always be people who need to articulate their voice through a teacher. And unfortunately, some of them will be offended because this is the plant that can't be negated. I then use the second thing that you have now. In fact, I think this is a teacher from GMDA. They're out there. They're in the meeting. I don't think it's not my command. It's a tough rule of administration. So let me pick up another one from the text. It was in back today, but I didn't speak to the and the third one was, people are not adhering to this. It's in parliament or parliament. They are even resetting their rules so that the conduct is managed properly. And I put that one in. Oh, I'm so eager.
No, we'll find a way. We will find a way to articulate ourselves on this. So maybe the pizza story will come from us, move away from me, but maybe for accepting our problems. Look, but the question that was raised, what benefit is there to one if he registered if others continue to be confused? And it's only, it's a painful question to me. That's why I actually one of the recommendations is that when we come into the situation, employers are employees, in particular those that are responsible for the public infrastructure outlay, such as the running water, they must be compelled to employ people who have gone through a rigorous system of testing their competency. It's just as logical as that. Some of these states don't entities have embraced that. Others put that in terms of their organization, and how many of them are not registered with the government. Some are very concerned about that. They have a very then, I don't know about rainwater. We'll speak about during that time when we adhere to that. But it's especially a fact. The other benefits to these people is that they enjoy this notion of the process in mobility, in enhancement, in the register that you have, and you're going to work in a country that is a member of the International Engineering Alliance, where your issues are very much in the country. We use our website. One of the contributions, these people are seeking to employ engineers, savings without fear of production, that if it's an asset, you can come to us and take a look for the list of engineers and engineers go to your website. You can post your address for people who are seeking jobs. We need to do that. And that's one of the contributions. Because our website tends to be visited by a lot of people. And most of them are. The lady is still, I don't know if she's a honorable lady, but she's a woman. But she raised the question whether we defer. Honorable lady next to me, she had a question if you defer people who want to qualify to the university. Not a new project, we have about this. We are embarking on this. But the Council for Higher Education, which is a major of and we can access them from them, how many engineers are qualified from this institution. But what is more important is to track once they qualify, where do they go, who remains in the engineers. But the last point I would like to mention is it relates to the issue of what happens. The issue of law of engineers to or outside of engineers. Because sometimes they don't move in physically. Those founders are artificial insofar as the field is concerned. I may be appointed to a design of a water network and I use an engineer in Australia. As long as I see the need the data that is to have the following day I get the design committee done. And I service to them what when I get the money. And most of the companies in South Africa, especially the big guys in the conducting space, they are not owned in South Africa. They are owned outside South Africa, all of them. I can say that they are owned in the construction. And therefore the decision as to who deploys to do which quota is not informed by the borders of South Africa. It's informed by the business strategy of that organization. And it's just exchange information. As we go to sleep at night, something goes across the country through the internet. The following day it's a complete product it gets sold to land water. It's a very difficult thing. I hear people making a lot of but it is more
than that. Here is
our
time.
Honorable Chair, thank you very much. Hello,
okay, thank you. The youth always has an enemy. By this time around, I'm sure.
Just a minute.
We will consider it.
Yeah, no, we will. Thank you once more, Chair. Now, it's good that we are seeing some commitment in terms of how do we join this in your way towards Chair. But one issue that seems to have been left out is the issue of articulation, in the sense that there are fewer interventions that are aimed at addressing the issue of the dropout, particularly among students in this health and critical field. Now, what I think should also be on the table is the model that is used in, for instance, the nursing and the social work profession, in the sense that student nurses or student social workers get accredited at some certain stage of their academic period. Now, something that needs to be explored even in the engineering space. For instance, if an engineering student at that level decides to drop out, the highest qualification that student has is a matric certificate.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so if we are able to devise means to ensure that at least if they happen to fall within the wayside along the way, we are able to meet them halfway through either accreditation as an artisan or at a lower NGF level or at the NGF level at which one would have completed.
Mm-hmm.
Then the other issue, I'm actually glad that the EECs have dealt with the issue of the mandate, because as a South African Youth Council, we do not labor under any impression that EECA is entrusted with responsibilities of training graduates. But what we are saying is that the absence of graduates in the engineering space renders EECA useless, in the sense that there won't be anyone to regulate through registration. So it is important that EECA develops its own pipeline. Otherwise, in the long run, if we as a nation say, or no graduates that have been created, that means ICSA or its employees would be debt collectors for that entire period, because they would still be there regulated, but there wouldn't be anything that they are doing, or they would not register in people. Then there's also another concern that I have, Comrade Chairperson, and it bothers me so much that, but that's in a way of dealing with it, let us rather say that at some point we need to do away with the notion that there are graduates who are unemployable. Because that on its own is an indictment, not only on government, but the Institute of Higher Learning as well. Because one can boldly say that graduates are unemployable, but the very same person offers an internship opportunity, that doesn't enhance the employability of graduates. That is a lot of no concerns to the very same person raising that argument. Then the last point, as indicated earlier on, that our council, the South African Council, has in member organizations that are charged with different issues and responsibilities. Now, within our ambit, we have the South African Graduate Development Association. It is charged with issues relating to not only graduate employment, but enhancing the employability of graduates in other fields of study. Now, that association that is within our ambit has a database of all unemployed graduates. But the challenge with tapping into that database is that you'll be faced with the same challenge of finding a graduate suitably qualified, but when there is a need for that graduate to apply for a government job, you might find out that, yes, that graduate is grateful to have participated in a year-long internship program. But the same graduate is now disqualified from enrolling for other internship programs in any other government department. So the experience is only for 12 months, whereas the same government post would be requiring the experience of not less than 3 years. So it's something that we need to look into seriously. Thank you once more.
Unfortunately, as mentioned earlier, subject is one for engagement. There are many parents who have taken an interest. You can imagine if you still had here a water service commission, if you had here energy, water system, if you had here what other institutions, SAGA, and you can go on. Labor department, education department, who would have had to agree, I would imagine, as we have been observing the discussion, that we need to take a workshop on this matter.
we need to take a discussion that is very pointed at the end of all as to what is that one that should. There are now ideas that have arisen. Well, it becomes very clear that time just now did not permit us to engage in all areas. I would have imagined we would still have heard follow-up questions. Others would have still needed to make their own respective input. Say, Mambalikara has not nodded on that side. But what is clear is that there are very important issues that have been raised. This thing was in progress. One of those is a very last point raised by the Youth Council about this whole notion of the one-year intensive program versus the two-year something for discussion. Second issue raised here is about unemployed youth juxtaposed with having to import skills and having to look at the rationality of such. Links to that also is an issue related to incentives, the stroke, remuneration. Especially that leads to your problem area where the youth would really wish to, wouldn't wish to get into. Mentioning also being made is about education department and labor department, expected of them to be part of this discussion. There is no doubt and there is no debate about that. The audit skills, the audit of skills, is a matter that should reside in a number of departments. Whether you're going to have your public works or you're going to have your water, but other details that you might look into. Whether you're going to have that within your labor or your education, as I'm saying, the details that you might look into. Our researcher, I'm sure, will be able to get us both the Washington Accord and also the Sydney Accord. I'm sure he will stipulate that for members. The cybermodernity issue is an ongoing subject matter that we need to engage in from time to time, but we have to find a stop to that engagement. And that stop will only be talking about a solution. And why it's also becoming very clear with is that public service and administration department is very pivotal in this whole discussion. Especially this relates to the issues that are engaging, that talk to remuneration, that talk to incentives. I think that point has been made and emphasized first. I did make a point here that we don't necessarily have to focus on humans per se, but generally focusing on that's the discussion that Home Affairs is going to be taking on the 25th of August. Because it does not only confine to Cuba, it talks to foreign skills as to how we need to contract all of those. And I think those are the main issues that really. But one thing I can say as I conclude from where I've seated, there was one old man who was a premier in one province. called Eastern Cape. His name was Raymond Mhlaba. Raymond Mhlaba would have said at one point, you know, when we were fighting throwing stones, it was easy. But the government, you know, how you put it in short term. Got his own complexity. That is the issue that I was having a discussion the other day with the new mayor in the Nelson Mandela, Mr. Tapan. As soon as he is there for 3 months or so, you know, he tells me that, you know, looking from outside, it looks as if it was easy, but having to be inside, so complex. But having said so, the solution still resides here. For us to really begin to say which are the areas that we need to pinpoint at, and for us to be able to say,
are going to make some headway. As I mentioned, it is work in progress. We have started the process. We really need to keep track of it in our program so that we are able to arrive at some conclusion. I don't know if any further issues. It is that time when you are supposed to go out there and eat and refuel. We still have a long day to go. I have my own meeting now at 12:30, which I'm supposed to go to.
Hayi, ngiyabonga uhlala. Bengithi angibuyele kulezi zame ngaphambili ukuthi njengoba belo bebelesele ukuthi labantu bangaphandle bafanele bafike ngomthetho othile. Bakwazi ukubaprothesela iy'ngane zethu phela labantu bafika imathele la badlalisa iy'ngane zethu. Bayasuka nabantu bayayishiya iy'ngane zethu. Abakayithathi manje ukuthi bahambe nayo bayoyishada ale. Kana nje nombuzo kodwa noma engophendulanga manje ngoba kufuna abanika le mvumo bananike yonke into. Asihambe ngani yami ayithathi ahambe nayo. Hayi athunezela la.
Sawula is very that those who are national come here and kids and then leave them without having to take them and get them to marry wherever they go. So that is a message to especially to Redwater. I want to propose that we adjourn the session. I'm quite aware that we're supposed to take a break before the last time.